is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run.
Fires down the middle.
It is intercepted by Micah Hyde. Intercepted. Tre Day. Tre'Davious White.
He's in trouble. He is sacked. Jordan Poyer came unblocked.
It is Jerry Hughes who brings him down.
What a big play there.
McCoy cuts to the right.
Outrunning everybody. 10, 5.
Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Hello there, welcome back to One Bills Drive. We're here again Tuesday afternoon, January 30th. John Murphy, Donald Jones in our One Buffalo studio in the front end of the At Pro Sports Training Center. Good afternoon to you, whether you're tuned in on the radio on our flagship in Buffalo, WGR Sports Radio 550. Perhaps you're watching on the video side on MSG Networks. Great to be here, Don.
You know, it's good to be here. I'm quickly going down this rabbit hole that is coffee. It's pretty bad.
Just discovered coffee, did you?
I did, like 2 weeks ago, and now it's this is ridiculous.
You're a full-grown man, and you're just discovering coffee. I limit myself. You know how I get. I'm down, I do one small Tim Hortons, maybe a medium, and that's about all I can handle on a daily basis.
Really?
Yeah, I can't handle it.
I mean, when it kicks in for you, it's a different John Murphy.
Yeah.
You know, without you're like cranky.
Yeah. And with it, I get a little short with people and cut people off on the telephone.
Yeah,
and
condescending. So for those of you who are listening, if Murph cuts you off on the phone or
doesn't mean
if he's short with
you,
it doesn't mean he doesn't love you. It just means that he either did or didn't have his coffee.
It's all about the caffeine ingestion. We're here for 3 hours today, and we've got complete and total Super Bowl coverage. Our man Steve Tasker, we're going to be heading out to Minneapolis, Minnesota, the Twin Cities, where the Super Bowl is. So that's coming up today. We'll discuss the events of the last 24 hours. It's been an interesting 24 hours here at One Bills Drive, filled with announcements and coaching moves and reports of coaching moves. We'll deal with all that today. But it's supposed to be quiet this time of year here. It's anything but right now.
It is supposed to be quiet. I thought it was going to be quiet.
Me too.
For the entire offseason. But, like you said, it's anything but. I mean, it's good for us on the show, though. We need some stuff to talk about.
Yeah. We thought we'd be just dealing with Super Bowl news all week. That is not going to be the case. We'll deal with some Buffalo Bills news as well. But there is, of course, the Super Bowl. Super Bowl 52 coming up on Sunday in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And we've got our man. We've got our best people out there. Our producer, Jay Harris, is there. And our buddy, Steve Tasker, Bills Wall of Famer from the NFL on CBS, covering the Super Bowl for us this week. And he joins us live right now through the magic of television and radio from Super Bowl 52 and Radio Row in the Media Center in the Mall of America in Bloomington, Minnesota. Steve Tasker joins us live. Hello, Steve. How you doing?
Hey, Murph. How you guys doing?
Is
all my equipment working, by the way? Am I coming through loud and clear?
Yeah.
You're coming through. We're trying to figure out where you are exactly in the mall, Steve.
I'm straight across from the Carlos Bake Shop and the Shake Shack. And on the other side is the actually Moose Mountain Amusement Park here in the Mall of America. Plus, I'm on Radio Row. I'm gonna have our guy Jay pan the camera around if you want to see where I'm at. I'm in the midst of Radio Row, and you guys know how Radio Row is. And you get down here to Mall of America, they put all the radio stations from around the country in one spot. We're sitting next to CBS Radio out of New York, you know, Jim Rome, Fox Sports Radio. Every single outlet all around the country is within about 30 or 40 yards of where we are at here in the Mall of America. We're in the food court, so it smells great here. And there's a coffee shop right next to us as well. So we're pretty tightly packed in here, but we do have it does give you access to a lot of people. We're going to have a lot of guests for you this week, so it should be a lot of fun.
Is the mall open, Steve? I mean, are people roaming around buying shoes and underwear and going to the food court?
It just opened like 5 minutes ago. Like, it's 11 o'clock here. Actually, it's been open, for an hour, like at 10. Some of the stores open a little earlier than that, but there have obviously been people in here for quite some time. But yeah, the mall's open, and now there's people. They have us fenced in, so they can't like come over and sit down with me. But yeah, there's just people milling around. Enormous place.
I was wondering that, Steve. I'm like, man, are they just have people walking through the food court here? I mean, people need to eat, so you're gonna have some upset people because they can't get the Shake Shack. We know Murph likes his Shake Shack burgers and stuff like that.
No. All the restaurants are open. You can get to it. We're walled off from everybody, but. Yeah, and all of a sudden, within the last really half hour, the place has really started to fill up, and now everybody's hanging around, and it's it's starting to get pretty busy here.
It's an interesting setup. And, Steve, so you're at the Mall of America. I believe it's the largest mall in America, as a matter of fact. And where
maybe like, the largest building I've ever laid eyes on.
where's the action? Like where are the Patriots and where are the Eagles? Where do they practice? Where's the stadium where the game will actually be played? Nowhere near you, right?
No, we're 15, 20 minutes from downtown. Last night we went down to the XL Energy hockey arena here in town where we got some footage you're going to see later in the show. We talked to our boy Frank Reich, offensive coordinator of the Eagles last night, along with some other guys that you'll hear from as well. That's downtown, obviously. Back 25 years ago or 30 years ago when we played in the Super Bowl here, this is where the hockey arena was, and now it's the Mall of America. So at least that's what I'm told by the locals. And then the stadium is also obviously downtown. We're 15, 20 minutes outside of downtown, and that's where most of them, both teams are staying, somewhere right around in there. I know one of the teams is practicing at the University of Minnesota, and the other team, I think the Patriots are practicing at Minnesota, and I think the Eagles are practicing in the stadium or someplace around there. I'm not sure exactly which. All those guys, and I remember this from years past, you know, you can't get near the players and the teams. They are sequestered away, and they only come out, and they give you pretty limited access to them. But when that happens, you know, there's, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 media outlets that are there to take part in it.
And, of course, this gets us to where, you know, your experience playing in 4 Super Bowls, one of them there in Minnesota. You and your producer there, Jay Harris, were at the Super Bowl opening night, which replaced Media Day for those who follow the Super Bowl. You used to have Media Day on Tuesdays, I believe. But I guess I'm interested in your take on how much it has changed in the, 25 years or so since you and your teammates were going to the Super Bowl. Is it bigger? Is it more unwieldy? What are your initial impressions there, Steve?
Well, they're starting to get it. They're starting to streamline a little bit, no question about it. In the hockey arena last night, they had the ice covered up and actually was raised up on a big platform, and they had it all done up in a huge kind of event type of atmosphere with stages and backdrops and lighting and sound stages. They had national radio programs going on live at the event. They also had, of course, NFL Network and ESPN were set up there with some panels. Or it was the NFL Network, I'm sorry, that were set up there with some panel discussions. You know, all the guys you'll see on television, they were doing live shots from there. But also, too, in some ways, it was a little bit better handled, a little bit more subdued. There was one guy in a shark outfit. There was one guy from Austria who was in sort of some getup. And it was a lot of entertainment outlets, more news media outlets than there are sports media outlets as well, so which is kind of the way it kind of gets bigger and bigger. But also one of the things is it was late at night. It got over at like 10:30 at night, and that means there wasn't so many people there as there were like on a Tuesday afternoon, as you alluded to, that sometimes they used to hold that thing on. And I think that made it a little better for the media guys and the sports people there. Still a lot of media people there, but I think the access was a little bit better handled last night than I've seen it in recent years.
Hey, Steve, did the guys look – I mean, I know the teams just really got into town yesterday, as you did. Did the guys look exhausted yesterday as they were doing that whole media event last night?
Too early in the week for them to be exhausted yet. Yeah. Tomorrow night they'll probably get really exhausted. I remember – and I've seen it happen year after year in the Super Bowl. Donald, you know how it is. You kind of allot a certain amount of your energy level towards all the stuff that goes on. You kind of have a normal week last week. We'll talk about this in some of the interviews that are coming up later in the show. You have this week-long time to get ready and geared up, get all your ticket reservations, your hotel reservations, your flights for all your family and everybody, get all that settled, and go through a normal week of preparation at home, like last week in Philadelphia and last week in New England for these teams. Then when you get here, you kind of have that same allotment of energy for all the distractions, the media obligations, the practice, and the new environment that you have to meet and practice in. You use all that allotted energy up by about Thursday of this week. And then you're thinking, well, gosh, you know, the normal week of distractions is kind of come and gone, and now all my energy is used up for that. And now you have to dig deep and go Friday, Saturday, and really even Sunday before the game takes place, and that's when it really gets frustrating for the guys. And now it's still fun and games. It's brand new. You know, last night they just flew in and had a little media get-together, and it was fun for them, and I'm sure that'll continue for another day or two, but pretty soon, later in the week, Thursday night, Friday, they're going to get pretty sick of all the stuff and get ready to play the game, and they're going to get tired of waiting. And that's when I think they'll start to look exhausted, like you said.
Steve Tasker is talking to us from Super Bowl 52 from Radio Row at the Mall of America Stadium in Bloomington, Minnesota. John Murphy and Donald Jones here in Buffalo in our One Buffalo studio. Hey, Steve, can you detect nerves on the part of any players? And in particular, I guess they had the quarterbacks side by side at one point when the Patriots were leaving and the Eagles were coming in. What did you see there? Did you pick up on any vibe from either team?
Yeah, later on we talked to Sal Powell last night, Sal Palantonio last night, who's a Philly guy, and he 25 years ago this week he got assigned to start covering the Eagles. So he kind of mentions that in the interview, but I noticed it, and he said something in the interview. Nick Foles looked a little bit like a deer in the headlights last night. Tom Brady, I mean, good grief, that guy's been, this is where he lives, you know, in the middle of the spotlight, in the middle of the storm, and the Super Bowl. Tom Brady has been there for 17 years. Nick Foles, not so much. And you could tell last night he was a little wide-eyed and looking around, a little unsure of what he was going to do next. And you'll see some of that as the week goes on. But I think you're right. I think there was a little bit of the wide-eyed, golly gee, kind of atmosphere for the Eagles coming in here. For the Patriots, they were here 12 months ago, so it's nothing for them.
Yeah, it's not even just Tom Brady. It's a lot of those guys on that team have been here 3-4 times. Now, as you talk about Nick Foles and he kind of looking like a deer in headlights, you had a chance to sit down with Frank Reich, and I don't want to give away the interview that you had with him, but maybe off air, did he get to say how he's helping to prepare, because he was a backup quarterback, to prepare Nick Foles for this type of environment?
Yeah, I think those guys, including Frank, and I talked to Frank about it. Doug Peterson and Frank Reich are two of the really experienced backup quarterbacks. Nick Foles, by the way, is a backup quarterback. Mm-hmm. He's got two pretty good mentors handling him. And I think the thing that got me, both Doug Peterson and all the guys coming out of the Philly locker room and their rhetoric coming out, even when they made the switch after Carson Wentz was injured, they have total confidence in Nick Foles. They like him as a player. He's got a lot of command of the offense. This guy was a high draft pick and a starting quarterback. He was drafted to be the guy. And he's got those qualities. They've got total confidence in their ability to go out and play well and win with Nick Foles. So I think their level of concern about Nick Foles probably is a little less than all of ours because we have questions about him. They see him every day. And I think Frank Reich, Doug Peterson, the players, Carson Wentz, all of those guys have the utmost confidence in Nick Foles and his ability to be ready to play this game. So I think those guys, I don't think it's a concern for them. We notice it and we'll talk about it, but I don't think it's too much of a concern for the Eagles. I think they're very confident that Foles is going to be the guy and he's going to play well.
Steve, and the Patriots side, and you mentioned Brady is an old hand at this. Brady had that little dust-up regarding some radio talk show guy in Boston and his daughter, Tom Brady's daughter. And I thought Brady looked like he put that to rest pretty quickly and effectively last night, right? Did you catch any of that or follow any of that at all?
Yeah, I saw it. And you're right. I mean, he handled that like an experienced, intelligent guy with a lot of grace handled it. He didn't make a big deal out of it. He didn't, try to get any kind of revenge or go back at him and say, hey, I'm never going to, he didn't overblow it. He just said, listen, I didn't like it, and I'm going to decide over the course of the next few months what I'm going to do about it. It's not a big deal. He goes, he didn't want anybody to lose their job over it. He goes, he knows a young guy who made a mistake, and he understands that. But let's face it, the radio station in Boston needs Tom Brady a lot more than Tom Brady needs that radio gig once a week. He's probably at this point in his career, he's ready to say, you know what, I don't need this kind of thing, and I'm not really willing to deal with it on a week-to-week basis. I think he handled it extremely well. I think a lot of players could take a lot of advice and a lot of mentoring from a guy seeing how Tom Brady handled that instance right there. Because in this age of the Twitter universe, it's so easy. You see some of these other players around the league spout off and try and get revenge over a 140-character Twitter tweet. Tom Brady didn't do that, and I think he handled it extremely well. He didn't overblow it. He didn't react emotionally. He just said, you know what, it's time to reevaluate that relationship, and did it very quietly. Even last night in the middle of 4,000 media outlets, he handled it with a lot of grace and class and calmness. And I think a lot of guys could learn a lot from the way he did that.
Because it struck me that you know, they had last night, the opening night, they call it, media day. They're meeting the media today, both teams. They'll do it again tomorrow. They'll do it again Thursday. I mean, there's a lot of opportunities for guys to slip up, to put their foot in the mouth, to create a little mini Super Bowl controversy. You and your teammates were no stranger to that during your four-year Super Bowl run.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's almost like the more exposures you get to the media, the more chances you are creating some idiotic Super Bowl firestorm this week.
It's like walking. It's literally walking through a room full of mouse traps, and you got to watch your step. Yeah, and even last night we spoke to some of the players, and you know, we talked to David Harris last night, linebacker for the Patriots, and he says, well, and I asked him a question about game planning and the Eagles and stuff, and he says, well, I can say, you know, so he's thinking about it before he even said anything. He says, listen, I can talk about this part of it. So, you know, the Patriots are well aware of this. I think it's going to be very interesting to see how Doug Peterson prepares the Eagles for all the distractions and some of the things. I would say you can bet that if one team does make a mistake and say something, and you know how it is, some guy will say something, it'll come out, he said something inflammatory or derogatory or disrespectful or whatever, however you characterize it, and it's going to, every outlet's going to hear about it. And then it becomes a contest as to who can can handle that, you know, that distraction the best. So I would say if it's going to happen, it's probably going to happen to the Philadelphia Eagles, but I don't know that. We'll have to see if it does or not. So,
Steve, how much?
Can you still see me? I know somebody bumped our camera.
No, you're still good.
You're good.
We can see your nice, beautiful face. How?
It's crowded here.
I'm sure. So you played in, what, four games out there. When you were there, you went from 1 week of the Super Bowl to 2 weeks of the Super Bowl, where now it's a total fiasco. You have – we're talking about the Eagles and the experience and walking through this big media room, and you can probably slip up. And there's so much leading up to the game. But when you get to the game, what's it like in the game in terms of nerves? I mean, does it all just settle down once you get in the game because it's a football game at the end of the day?
Sort of. I mean, yeah. I mean, once you do that. But listen, you get out there and you – It's not a real game, and this, and guys say this all the time, and they act like this is some big revelation. This Super Bowl is not about a football game. It's about the NFL. It's about the whole league. It's about the 800-pound gorilla in sports in the United States showing off its championship game. The football, and I'm telling, I've said it 100,000 times, and I've heard other guys say it 1,000 times as well. The Super Bowl isn't about the game. It's an event. The warm-ups are compromised. They're changed, the schedule of the warm-ups for the game. The halftime is extended to over twice of what a normal halftime is. And the post-game and the sidelines and the protocols for even getting on the field are changed. You got teams that it's the only game you'll ever play in where the strength conditioning staff of the team and the training staff of the team has to set out food during the game at halftime so the players can eat. You got a four-hour game pregame window where you eat 4 hours before the game or 3 hours before the game. By the time the extended pregame and the extended halftime, you can't get to the end of the game without running out of carbs, of carbo load that you took 4 hours in the pregame meal. You have to eat during the game because it's such a long period of time during that day that you have to go back and replenish. So it's everything is different about the game. And the team that handles that better is really going to give themselves at least a chance to play a normal game during the first half and then after the halftime during the second half of the game. Everything is completely different. And you got to be ready for it. There's just no way not to be, you know, to treat it like a normal game because it just is not. And I know last night, the Eagles were saying, yeah, we got to treat it just like a normal game, just like a normal game. It's impossible. And I think right now at the early going, I think the Eagles have got some things that they're going to have to get their players ready for that I don't know if they've really thought about.
Yeah, and how do you think Belichick deals with that? How does he get his players convinced that it's not a real game? And, you know, this is a guy who kind of has invented, you know, we're on to Cincinnati, we're on to Seattle. This is a totally different game for him.
Exactly. And I think one of the things, you know, this mantra they have of do your job and they get all this stuff done. you got to acknowledge that. I think as a head coach in an organization, you got to say, hey, listen, guys, you got this going on. Be ready for it. Your day's going to look like this, and it's going to feel like this. So be ready for it. And once you get the guys at a point where they know that that's what's going to happen, they can handle it if they're prepared to handle it, if they know it's coming, if they're prepared for it. And for a team like Eagles who don't get here as often as the Patriots do, or at least haven't in the last few years, you know, you got to get your guys lined up to get ready for it. And when you're going to get up and go to practice and all of a sudden you got to bust 20 minutes to practice and you got to dress at a different place and shower at a different place and your meetings are in another place, sometimes it's difficult to do. But, you know, the Patriots have been through this so many times with Bill Belichick. You know, it's not uncommon. You can bet Doug Peterson and Frank Reich and Jim Schwartz and all those head coaches – former head coaches and assistant coaches and guys with experience in the league, they spend a lot of time leading up to the playoff run calling out other organizations that they have relationships with. Say, how'd you guys handle this? How'd you guys handle that? So there's no question they've gotten some lead time as to how handle this week. But nevertheless, it's the first time for them.
Yeah.
And there's always a question of how do they do it. You never see the Patriots at the center of a bad performance, almost never. You look back years ago, remember in the Lawyer Malloy game when the Patriots came into Orchard Park opening day and the Bills signed Lawyer Malloy? That's the only time I can remember Tom Brady being at the center of a bad performance, when the Bills beat him 31-0 in that game. You just don't see it that often, and their ability to prepare for odd situations and every contingency is really the difference.
Steve, I feel like we're seeing, I don't want to say a softer side of Bill Belichick, but we've seen more emotion from Bill. After winning the AFC Championship, you actually see him smile. Yesterday, last night at the podium, you see him actually smiling, joking. He had the hat on as they got off the plane, which was reported to be a tribute to his dad. I mean, do you feel like there's something to Bill Belichick? He's been here so many times, he's just so relaxed, where now you get to see him actually show a little emotion.
I think guys do that when they can see the end of it. I never really thought about it, but I think if the Patriots come out here and win the Super Bowl and do all that, I think Bill Belichick is going to – it's been great, and I think he may walk away after this game.
Really?
I haven't really thought about – yeah. I've seen the same thing you do. I've seen other guys who have put together unbelievable careers. Nobody's put together a career like Bill Belichick.
Right.
Nobody. He's been – in my opinion, he's the best guy that's ever done it. In this day and age, to have the level of success, sustained success that he has said time and time again he doesn't want to be coaching when he's 70. Well, the guy's 66. Mm-hmm. Winning two straight Super Bowls, putting the number out there at like six Super Bowls he's won by himself, six out of eight that he's won if they win this game this week. I think, you know what, he's probably got a pile of money. He's got a family. He's got some boys that he likes to spend time with. He's got guy, you know, part of his staff. He's got a great relationship with ownership. I could see him saying, you know what, I've enjoyed it. It's been fun, and I'm going to step away. I don't know. That's just me talking. He's never said anything like that, and I could be completely wrong. But when a guy starts to show emotion and start to kind of think about this being his last go-around, I think they do that. I think they do get a little nostalgic, and they do things like tribute to their dad when they get off the plane, show right. A little emotion on the sidelines. And I think maybe Bill Belichick, it's crossed his mind.
Interesting.
I just look at it as you start to embrace it more. He's been such a guy over the years, all I'm worried about is the game. All I'm worried about is the game. Where now you actually see him enjoying the moment a little bit. You know, you see Tom Brady enjoying the moment a little bit.
Well, I think that's right. When you enjoy it, knowing it may be your last go-around, I think that's a sign. That's just for me, though. I'm guessing. He ain't going to tell that, and I could be completely off base, and he'd be maybe laughing at me when I say that. But I think it's a point where a guy like Bill Belichick, so you know what, he isn't going to enjoy it this last time. It is a little bit different for him because he's not going to be back here again. Because he's made in his own mind decided that. Guys do that at the end of their career. They get a little bit more nostalgic, a little bit more melancholy, and, you know, they do start to raise up out of that, take their nose off of that grindstone and look around a little bit and appreciate it. And I think You see that in Bill Belichick. Whether that means he's going to end it all or not, no question. But I see the same thing you do. I think he's appreciating this trip a little bit more than we've seen him in past years.
Interesting. All right. Hey, Steve, you're just getting started out there. I want to ask you, we've got an interview coming up we're going to play that you did last night with your buddy Frank Reich, offensive coordinator for the Eagles, another one with Sal Palantonio. It had to be good for you to catch up with Frank Reich, I would think, huh?
Yeah, he's doing great. I mean, he's an NFL quarterback. He's not my little backup quarterback friend, you know. I mean, we're friends. I mean, we know each other. But, you know, 20 years ago, we were young kids, you know, playing football together, you know, and playing, you know, on the Bills basketball team in the off season together. And, you know, our wives were having babies and stuff, you know, 20 years ago. Now, he's an NFL coordinator, and he looks like it. He acts like it. He's a coach. He knows what he's doing. He knows the numbers. He knows his team. He likes this team. I can see it. He likes this Eagles team. He thinks they're something special, and they are. To get here, you're a special team, and you've put together a special season. And I think he really likes his crew, and I think you'll see that in the interview a little bit. I know I watched him doing his media at his podium last night. Right. I watched him for quite some time. He likes his guys, and it's good to see. But there's no question he's an executive kind of guy. You know, he's a coach, he's a coordinator that knows all the numbers, likes his crew, and I think it's good to see. He's evolved into a high-level coach in an industry that is difficult to excel in, and I'm really proud of him.
Makes me wonder if he was big-timing you a little bit last night. No?
Yeah. No? He could try. I wouldn't let him. You know, no, Frank Reich doesn't big time anybody.
Yeah, I know that.
I saw that last night too. And he's just not that type of guy, but it was fun to see him. And he's doing great. He's at the top of his career at this point. He's a guy who's been a quarterback coach for Peyton Manning, Philip Rivers, and now Carson Wentz and Nick Foles. He's got a really impressive resume as a player and a coach, and he's a guy that when you hear him talk, you can see it in his words and in his action, the way he carries himself. So he's got some cachet in the NFL right now. He's a top coordinator on a team in the Super Bowl.
So Steve's interview with Frank Reich coming up moments from now. Also, we'll hear Steve's interview with Sal Palantonio from ESPN. Coming up at 1 o'clock, you're going to be live with a guy that we don't know a whole lot about, a comedian named Craig Gass, G-A-S-S. We're looking forward to that, Steve.
Yeah, it'll be fun. He does impressions, and he's been on television and some other things. He was on Sex and the City. He played a character on that. He's been a voice on Family Guy. He's bouncing around. He's a quality voiceover guy, impressionist, and he paid his dues through all the bar dives and all that throughout all the early 90s, mid 90s, late 90s, and now he's getting bigger and better. So it'll be fun to talk to him.
Steve with Craig Gass at 1, Solomon Wilcox from the NFL on CBS with Steve at 1:30, and maybe a little bit later on we'll hear some of the interviews you did from last night, maybe some new ones today. Hey, Steve, thanks. Take care of our buddy Jay Harris, and
all right,
thanks for talking with us. We'll get back with you in a couple of minutes here today later on the show. Thank you. Steve Tasker coming to us live from the Mall of America in Bloomington, Minnesota, the media headquarters, Radio Row for Super Bowl 52. There's a lot there. There's a lot to chew on. And I'm sure in Steve's mind there's a lot that goes back to his memories of the Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
Huh?
I mean, he played one in Minnesota. So, yeah. Radio Row, though, it's like the headquarters for anybody who's anybody, a celebrity, is usually going through Radio Row doing their media.
Comedians like Craig Gass.
Right.
Also today on the show, as we said, Steve's lineup, Frank Reich, Sal Palantonio, Craig Gass, Solomon Wilcox, maybe some other surprises as the afternoon comes along. We're going to be talking with Mike Waffle, recently retired as of this morning, retired defensive line coach for the Buffalo Bills. He'll be joining us live at 2 o'clock today. So come on back. We got a big show for you here today. Plus, we'll talk about the events of the day here in Orchard Park and out in Minnesota as well. It's the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. We're coming to you live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
It's getting started, it seems, here at the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. We're coming to you live from One Bills Drive. John Murphy and Donald Jones. We got Steve Tasker out of Super Bowl 52. Going to hear from him in a couple of minutes here. But this is it's not been a quiet 24 hours here at One Bills Drive. There's no other way to put it, Donald, with the stuff that's been going on. Today the news is some changes on the defensive coaching staff with Bill Teerlink promoted to defensive line coach. He's been the Bills' assistant defensive line coach for the last year. Bill Teerlink is now the new Bills' defensive line coach. He came to the Bills after spending 4 years as a defensive line coach at the University of Nevada, 2014 through 2016. I guess that's 3 years, isn't it? Yeah. Before that, he spent some time with the Indianapolis Colts as a defensive assistant. So Bill Teerlink takes over as the new defensive line coach for the Buffalo Bills, replacing Mike Waffle, who announced his retirement this morning. 20 seasons in the National Football League, or I guess he announced his retirement yesterday. Native of Hornell, he's going to join us on the show today at 2 p.m. And talk about his 19-20 seasons in the National Football League, including this last one with the Buffalo Bills. You did a podcast with Lorenzo. Did he have some comments about Teerlink? Did I hear? I've heard somebody told me he spoke very highly of him. Maybe not on the podcast.
Not on the podcast.
Okay.
Yeah, we talked off air about him, and he said, you know, he's deserves this job. He's done a very good job with those guys on the defensive front, working with Mike Waffle. First, I'll just say I'm happy for Coach Waffle,
yeah.
You know, as he's now, I guess, retiring. So,
yep.
I mean, that's a good thing for him. Now he can kind of go spend some more time with his family. Coaches spend so much time. I mean, they spend so much time here in meetings, and then we always talk about the players spend a lot of time here, but the coaches spend more time than the players. And then they're traveling all of the time. They don't really get to spend much time with their families. They move around from job to job based on – wherever you end up. If you end up in somewhere in like New England, you might stick there for the next 10 years or something like that. But for the most part, these guys bounce around. So now he gets to chill with his family a little bit and enjoy that. And we'll see if he stays retired or if he gets that itch in a couple of years to come back and coach again. But I'm happy for him.
Me too.
And I think it's a good thing that they've actually promoted from within to kind of give the guys who are still here, it'll still be the same technique type of thing. For me, it's always tough when you transition from coach to coach, somebody from the outside who wants to come in and they change the technique, something that you felt, man, I was good at doing this technique last year. Now I gotta do something totally different.
So we will talk with Coach Waffle about his plans, about his career, about his 1 year with the Buffalo Bills. That's coming up today on the show at 2 o'clock. There's that bit of coaching news today. There's also reports out there, and no confirmation yet. We may get some sort of confirmation before the end of today. But reports out there that the Bills are ready to name a new defensive backfield coach. Alex Marvez reports that former Houston Texans defensive backs coach John Butler is in line to be the new defensive backs coach for the Buffalo Bills. He's been a secondary coach with the Houston Texans for 4 years, before that at Penn State. A high school football teammate of Bills head coach Sean McDermott. But again, no confirmation of this, just a report. Alex Marvez reporting that John Butler is going to be named the new defensive backs coach for the Buffalo Bills, replacing Gil Bird, who spent the last year here. No confirmation on any of that yet. We had retirement. Well, no, we didn't have a retirement announcement yesterday. We had a end-of-career announcement yesterday for Eric Wood in a news conference that we stayed with as long as we could. I mean, we hung in there for 55 minutes. Eric finally got started and was done after a minute and 48 seconds or so announcing his plans. His football career is over. He said that. Eric made that pretty clear. He will no longer be able to play football given his neck injury. Even with further treatment, rehab, or surgery, a return is not possible. But Eric did not say the word retirement, did not take questions, which left a lot of people with even more questions. And it was a little bit sad, Donald, I have to say. It was all set up to be, a great, fond, maybe teary farewell to Eric Wood and his great NFL career. And because of contractual considerations, obviously he's getting advice from his advisors, you know, not to say the word retirement, not to end it because of they're still trying to work out details of how his, the end of his career will go and what they do contractually. But because of that, I think it's short-circuited. It could have been a great event with questions about his time in Buffalo, his tenure in Buffalo, his associations and friendships in Buffalo, his charitable work. None of that was able to be talked about yesterday because he didn't take any questions and because, you know, it just kind of short-circuited it. I found that unfortunate yesterday.
Yeah, it was definitely unfortunate. And you talk about the contractual stuff. And so that's really what it was. And I know a lot of people wanted to hear so much more from
Eric
Wood.
Included.
And it was tough. I wish he would have been able to say more things. He wasn't. Maybe we'll hear more from him in the future.
Maybe.
I hope so. Maybe we'll get him on the show in the future. I expect him to still be around the community. He's done so much in this community, so I expect him to still be around and doing things. But yesterday was it was awkward for us and for a lot of people because it was like, wait, what just happened? We've been waiting for a little while.
Yeah.
And then he only got a chance to really speak for really less than 5 minutes. But I look forward to speaking to him in the future, and I don't doubt that that we will be able to.
I hope so. You know, his status still up in the air. He is on, for now, on the Buffalo Bills roster, not officially filing retirement papers. Brandon Bean, the Bills general manager, talked about it after the announcement from Eric Wood yesterday. And he was asked point blank, are there still remaining some unresolved contractual issues with Eric Wood? Here's what Brandon Bean had to say.
Well, we don't have any cap room right now. Like, you know, you roll it over. So he'll be on our roster for a while until we figure things out.
Not to get specific, you know, you can't do that, but is there a certain way that you have to kind of approach this as far as the CBA is concerned, all different kinds of designations? Is that what you're working through right now, basically?
Yeah, that's all what it is. It's just we'll get it worked out. He'll do stuff on his end, and we'll do it with the help of the league office and the management council, and we'll figure it out from there.
Is it disappointing in this sense that this the day that you hope to send Eric off just became something to this effect, just a statement?
Well, that's why you don't want to try and right. celebrate, and hopefully he can celebrate again. I think it's neat that he was able to get a lot of ex-players and friends and a lot of guys that are in this locker room here and staff, and that shows what Eric meant to the team and the community, and I'd really rather just leave it at that. I think that's the fair thing for him and for us right now.
Brandon Bean, Bills general manager, yesterday after Eric Wood's announcement. I got an empty feeling yesterday. Like, you wanted so much more. You wanted such a great send-off for Eric, and because of the contractual situation, that was not able to happen. All right, Super Bowl. You're caught up on what's going on here, which is a couple of coaching moves and maybe one more announcement on that. Super Bowl going on out there in Minneapolis. Steve Tasker, you just heard from him. He went last night with our producer Jay Harris to what they call Super Bowl opening night, essentially media day. Looked like about 3,000, 3,500 media members.
It's crazy. I mean, it's like a smaller version of the Olympic open night.
Yeah, really? It was a show. It was a show. But Steve did get a chance to talk to the guy he referred to earlier, his former teammate with the Buffalo Bills, Frank Reich, who is now the Philadelphia Eagles offensive coordinator. And Steve talked to him about the fact that here's Frank Reich, maybe one of the most famous backup quarterbacks in NFL history, leading another backup quarterback, Nick Foles, into the Super Bowl. Here's their conversation.
Frank, first thing I got to ask you, I mean, you and Doug Peterson both spent most of your careers backups, and now you've got Nick Foles in it. That's got to give you guys kind of a – you know how to push the buttons, talk to the guy, communicate with him. Plus, he's a pretty special player anyway.
Yeah, he really is. I think the button, the proverbial button that we knew how to push was don't panic like everybody else is panicking.
Right.
Be able to look at him in the eye and say, yeah, you're the guy, and we know you can do it. And to look him in the eye, and he knows that we mean that and that we do have that confidence, and he's played like it.
And I heard you talking to other people that's come out that, you know, the Philly fans were losing their minds. They thought it was all going down the tubes. And you did, you know, you did stumble as you would expect to with a new guy taking snaps, but you guys didn't at all. You had total faith in him from the word go.
We really did. I mean, at the end of the year, we knew this back in our Buffalo days when, I mean, one of the stumbles that we had was the last game of the year against the Cowboys, a game in which we had already clinched home field advantage. We know from personal experience those games aren't real. They're not real because you're more worried about the postseason at that point. So there was really only one game, and that was the Oakland game, which was a subpar game by our offense, and it was really by the whole offense. And we still won, so that was good news.
Yeah. You guys have really gotten a big boost with Jay Ajayi and the way you use your running back. It's not just a quarterback-driven offense. I mean, you knew if you could get the ball out of Nick's hands, you got guys all over the field that you can count on. And plus, with Doug calling the plays, you've really managed to keep things rolling for your team. So, you know, talk a little bit about what you expect from this team in this game, how the preparation's gone at this early stage.
Yeah, I mean, Doug's done a great job of calling the plays. And like you said, using all the weapons that we have to spread the ball around. That's really been one of our mantras this year. You know, we said we're like a basketball team that doesn't have a 30-point scorer. We have five guys who can score. All five guys can beat you. And so I think it makes us hard to defend because we're going to spread the ball around. I mean, even though Alshon Jeffries is our star receiver, and had a lot of touchdowns, you know, it's not like he had 100 catches and 1,500 yards. We spread it around. Same thing with our running backs. You know, we got LeGarrette, Jay, Corey Clement's a really good running. I mean, we're spreading the ball around there as well. Everyone's invested. There's an unselfishness to this team that is contagious, and that unselfishness is creating a chemistry and a belief in one another that we have something special.
Frank, good luck. It's great to see you. Congratulations. All the old guards are really proud of you. I hope we wish you all the best.
Thanks, Steve.
Frank Reich, Eagles offensive coordinator with Steve Tasker. All the old guys.
All the old guys, yeah.
Who are really proud guys? Of you. Yeah. Who's Steve referring to there? But that's pretty cool. Former teammates, very close teammates. As Steve said, you know, he was my backup quarterback buddy. I mean, those guys played golf together for years. Their kids grew up together. It's really cool to see the two of them reunite.
That's typical Steve Tasker, right? We always talk to him about, man, you should be in the Hall of Fame. And he's like, I was just an other on the team. Mm. So, of course, he becomes very good friends with Frank Reich, who was the backup quarterback, and that was my backup quarterback buddy.
It's pretty cool. That's a good story.
Steve did it back then to make Frank feel better. Better about himself.
Yeah. Hey, we want to remind you or let you know that coming up this weekend, there's a very special program that's going to air regarding the Bills back in the playoffs this year. Playoff Caliber, End of the Drought, presented by Connors and Ferris. It's going to air this Friday, 7 o'clock on Channel 7, and Saturday, 11:30 p.m. on Channel 7. Playoff Caliber, End of the Drought, a recap of the Bills' record-breaking end of the 17-season playoff drought presented by Connors and Ferris coming up this weekend, produced by Pagula Sports and Entertainment. We've got more to come from One Bills Drive when we return. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones in our One Buffalo studio. Steve Tasker standing by. He's going to be reporting to us live from the Super Bowl in Minneapolis coming up in a couple of minutes. Hey, Donald, as usual, you know, there are plenty of talk about the game, and Commissioner Goodell, I believe Friday, maybe Thursday, does his so-called State of the Game address, at which time he fields, you know, an hour's worth of questions from everybody, all the media covering the NFL, and he was asked yesterday in an appearance on Colin Cowherd's radio show about the catch rule. Now, this is kind of my campaign for eliminating instant replay.
Oh, instant replay, yeah.
Oh, yeah, eliminate the refs. Sure, eliminate.
I'm not even going to eliminate the refs.
No, I won't eliminate them, but replay I'd like to get rid of. But the commissioner was asked about the catch rule. He was asked if he is among those, does he understand that people are confused, and is he concerned that people are confused about the catch rule? Here's what Commissioner Roger Goodell told Colin Cowherd yesterday.
I'm not just somewhat concerned. I am concerned. We just had five Hall of Fame receivers and several coaches come in just 2 weeks ago to focus on the catch-no-catch rule, how we bring clarity. And this is where the balance comes in, Colin. We've had other examples of this over the years, where you want there to be clarity from an officiating standpoint, a coaching and a player standpoint. They know what it is, what it isn't. And so they draft the rule, the competition committee looks at it, they bring it to the membership, and they want that clarity. I think here you might have clarity in a large element of it, but then what happens is it's not the rule that people really want.
Right.
And one of our Hall of Fame receivers said it well to me when we looked at this a couple of years ago. Fans want catches. And
thank you. Yes.
And I think what, you know, we've got to try to do, and we had a really good discussion for over 3 hours and looking at a lot of tape, and we've got some ideas of how to bring some clarity to that. It's particularly in the going to the ground that I think has created a lot of the confusion, because it's a different rule when you're going to the ground than when you're on the sideline or in the end zone. And I think that's what we're focusing on, and the competition committee is going to be bringing this up in February and March, and I hope we'll be able to address this in a way that will bring more clarity and, frankly, more excitement to this.
I hope so, too. I hope they get to it. But there's a couple of things here, Donald. That was Roger Goodell talking to Colin Cowherd. A couple of things here that got my attention. Maybe they're right. You know, when the commissioner said fans want catches, they don't want catches overturned. I have a feeling that as a former receiver, you're probably going to say, of course they do.
Of course. Of course.
But that doesn't – do we really want that? Like, well, it's close to a catch, so we'll call it a catch?
No, you don't want
You don't want it to just be whatever is close, it's a catch. I mean, I think the biggest thing is, like you said last week, leave it in the officials' hands. They're right there real time. If they feel like it's a catch, then boom, it's a catch. I mean, it's when you go frame by frame by frame, a lot of these plays that probably would have been catches back in the day aren't catches anymore. It totally changes the outcome of the game. As a receiver, I feel like, man, you're taking touchdowns away from guys on plays that are – that's a catch. I mean, come on. I mean, that's a catch. The guy hit the ground, the ball moved a little inch, and you're like, that's not a catch? Come on, man. That's that. And back in the day, that was a catch. It should still be a catch. So I feel like, yeah, fans do want those to be catches. And, yeah, I mean, fans are upset because – you're going frame by frame and you're taking plays away from their team. But I think ultimately it's just better on the NFL if they just let the refs call it in real time and that be that.
I'd be up for that. Eliminate replay. What about his point? And it sounds like he's previewing where they may go, the competition committee this spring, when they talk about changing the catch rule, when he talks about how going to the ground has created a lot of confusion because it's a different rule when you're going to the ground than when you're on the sideline or the end zone, and I think that's where we're focusing on. Well, yeah, he said it right out. That's could they change something about, you know, completing the catch, the process of the catch going to the ground that would maybe make it a better rule? I don't know. To me, the problem lies with replay, quite frankly. The problem lies with going frame by frame, pixel by pixel, and picking out, does the ball move? Does he complete the process of the catch going to the ground or not? But would changing that, eliminating that that restriction of going to the ground, maintaining possession, would that make it a better rule? I don't know. What do you think?
I think it would. I think look back to where this really all started, and that was the Calvin Johnson play a couple of years ago when he clearly caught the ball, was going to the ground just for balance. The ball hits the ground, and it comes out, and they wave it, no catch. Something like that, that's a catch. Everybody in the stadium, including the refs, know that's a catch. But because of the rule in black and white in the rule book, they have to wave that off. You know, I think my problem is with the replay. My issue is let the refs call it, take so much out of in terms of the rules and going to the ground and all of that stuff. Let them call it in real time. If they see the ball move, if you can actually see, because this stuff happens like that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can actually see the ball move as a ref on the field, then you can say it's not a catch. But if you have to go to replay for you to watch frame by frame from 30 different cameras to actually see the ball slightly move in a guy's hand, that's a catch.
Yeah.
You got to just leave it at that.
Get rid of replay. That's my solution. And the commissioner will be talking about it, I'm sure, as the week goes on, and then look for this spring at the competition committee, February and March, look for them to adjust the catch rule. The commissioner essentially said that's what's going to happen. All right, 1 hour in the books. We're going to go back to Super Bowl 52 with Steve Tasker and a special guest coming up in the next hour, and we'll hear more about the Super Bowl and more about whatever's on your agenda when we return. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports update.
Update from One Bills Drive. The Buffalo Bills with a couple of coaching moves today. They promoted defensive line coach Bill Tierlink to the job after one season as assistant D-line coach here. He spent 3 years before that as a D-line coach at University of Nevada. And Tierlink, who comes from a long line of coaching in the NFL, Tierlink before that was a defensive assistant for the Indianapolis Colts. He replaces Mike Waffle, who announced his retirement late yesterday. Waffle, 20 years in the NFL this past season with the Buffalo Bills, and Waffle will join us on the show coming up here at 2 o'clock. The Bills also announced the promotion of Aaron Whitecotton as assistant defensive line coach. He's been with the team as an assistant to head coach Sean McDermott for the last year. Reports out there that the Bills are ready to hire a new defensive backfield coach, John Butler. Nothing confirmed yet. That report from Alex Marvez, he would replace Gil Bird as Bills' defensive backs coach. Blake Bortles, Jacksonville Jaguars quarterback, underwent surgery on his right wrist to fix an issue dealt with during the entire season, according to NFL Network. The injury was part of his throwing hand. He is expected to make a full recovery. Tennessee Titans with coaching moves. Mike Vrabel, the new head coach, announced that Matt LaFleur will be their new offensive coordinator. LaFleur joins the Titans after spending last season as the offensive coordinator for the Los Angeles Rams. Titans also announced that Dean Pease will be their defensive coordinator. Pease announced his retirement just last month. Buffalo Sabres start a 5-game homestand tonight with a matchup against the New Jersey Devils. Jack Eichel and Robert Lehner, the NHL second and third stars of the week, are in the lineup tonight for Buffalo. 7 o'clock faceoff at KeyBank Center. Sabres trying to continue a three-game win streak that began with three wins in Western Canada last week. And the UB Bulls go for their 10th straight win. The men's basketball team at UB at Kent State tonight in Ohio. That's a 7 o'clock tip-off. The Bulls looking to stay unbeaten in MAC play. It is the midway point of their conference season. And that is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones here. Steve Tasker standing by at the Super Bowl, Super Bowl 52 in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And Steve's got a special guest. Let's send it out to the Mall of America Stadium, Radio Row in Minneapolis, where Steve is standing by. Steve Tasker.
Thanks, Murph. I appreciate it. We're here in Mall of America. And Craig Gass, comedian, media person. I mean, you're performer, entertainer, impressionist, voice guy. You've been on Family Guy. You've been on Sex and the City. And now, even here at Super Bowl week, you've had this moment where you had a little viral. It's going to go viral. You're going to see this.
It's happening right now. ESPN right. And NFL and Fox have been talking about it. They don't know who the guy is that's doing the moment. But we're getting the footage out now, so everybody knows that it's me. But I walked up to Tom Brady. I thought maybe if I went to Tom Brady and maybe a couple other players first and said, listen, I'm going to attempt to do the impossible. I want to play a game called Can I Make Bill Belichick Laugh? Or Show Human Emotion?
Right.
One or the other. I mean, laugh is a big one. That's big. But Show Human Emotion was maybe I could settle for that.
Right.
And Tom Brady, of all the players, gave me some advice, and he said, I'll give you a couple key words that you can mention that will make them smile, that'll warm them up. He said, just say the words lacrosse, Navy, Bon Jovi. He's a huge Bon Jovi fan. So I just said those words, and I said, listen, I'm going to attempt to make you laugh, so just bear with me. And I thought the comedy would be me making the joke and him staring at me like he wanted me murdered.
Right, right.
And that would be the comedy. But I actually made him laugh. I couldn't believe it. I've been doing this every year at the Super Bowl. 2 years ago, I had a great moment with Peyton Manning where I said, Peyton, my name's Craig Gass. I'm a stand-up comedian. I have an idea for you. It's a game show I want to pitch to you called Peyton Manning Trivia, where it is impossible for you to get any question wrong. And he said, any question? I said, for you, impossible. And we're going to do a speed round right now. What is the largest city in the state of Nebraska? And he went, Omaha. Where is the College World Series played at every year? Omaha. And I made him say Omaha 10 times in a row and then corrected his answers and went, Omaha, 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 you are correct, sir. And he won the game. And it was a silly thing. And so I've been doing that every year and performing in the Super Bowl city every year right. Doing shows. So I'm performing here at a comedy club called New Hope Cinemas. And then I hang out with friends who I work with in sports radio. Yeah, yeah. So it's a fun hang.
Yeah, that's perfect for you. It's simulcast. We're going back on MSG back in Buffalo. And also, so tell me, you're a Seahawks fan, right?
I've been
the Russell Wilson fan on.
I've been a diehard Seahawks fan for over 25 years. There's so many fans now.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like there's more Bills fans starting to come up now because of how likable Bills fans are.
Yeah.
The Bills Mafia thing, I got to be honest, and I mean this sincerely.
It's real.
I like Bills fans more than even the fans of my team because they are the most, if you're willing to break your legs and light yourself on fire, then man, you got it.
Did you see the moment when the Bills finally broke the drought and they got into the playoffs where they won in Miami and then everybody, all Bills people were watching the Cincinnati-Baltimore game and the fourth down play and all the Bills fans thought together. They kind of had a genesis moment of a reset after the drought was over.
Yeah.
Now a new generation can enjoy the team.
So I saw, you were part I of saw, that, right? I saw video of the players watching in the locker room.
I've seen that 20 times. It's kind of moving.
It really is moving, man. And just their enthusiasm to get in the playoffs is like, I just admire that. But the fans are so crazy. It bothers me if a fan of any team wants to try to hurt somebody for being a fan of another team. But hurting yourself because you love your team so much, it's the funniest thing I've ever seen. I used to be a big pro wrestling fan when I was a kid. I've been watching these videos coming out, and I've been asking for years, like, what the hell's going on in Buffalo, man? They are going crazy up there, and so I really admire it. But another thing that I do when I'm out here is all these radio stations are broadcasting.
The 400 radio stations that are sitting here with us.
Hundreds of radio stations are broadcasting from all over the country, And I'm a voice guy. I started out with sure. Howard Stern. And
yeah, you've
I do,
been on the Howard Stern show a couple of times. He kind of likes your work.
I started with Howard in 1995 and started writing for him in 98. Started sitting next to him in 2001.
What got you? Like, did he go, hold, what? Like, what voice was it that got him?
Well, I've always been able to do any voice that I hear because right. of how I grew up. And this is not a joke, by the way. This is a true story.
Right. Your family, your parents can't hear.
Yeah, my whole family is. My right. mom, my dad, and my sister are all completely deaf.
Right.
So growing up in a deaf family, I couldn't learn
pretty
how to
quiet household.
Talk.
I don't
That's
mean that
what
as
people
a joke,
think. People
right?
think it's quiet, but it was the loudest because my mom never told me to turn down the radio, never told me to turn down the TV. Everything was cranked. And believe me, it's okay to make jokes because the most insane deaf jokes I've ever heard were from my own...
For your family?
Deaf family. Last year, I took my sister out. I surprised my sister with a surprise birthday party. And she, at dinner, was sitting across the table from me, and she's signing to me in sign language. And she right. said, do you want to hear a good joke? And I said, sure. And she went, me too. And I went, oh, my God, what? Oh, my God. Like, yeah,
that caught
so believe
that's
me.
That's an off guard with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. And like, so, but growing up in a deaf family, I couldn't learn how to talk
right.
from my family. I learned how to talk by copying all the voices I heard on TV.
Right.
And I never got an accent from the Bronx, which is where I'm right. from. And everybody in the Bronx sounds like Tracy Morgan.
Everybody in the Bronx
yeah.
talk like this, whether you black or white. Male or female, that's crazy.
So, yeah, everybody sound like that. And then the weirder the voice, the easier it is for me to do it. So when I come out here to Radio Row every year, I have friends who will say, hey, man, like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, it's quiet out here or
sure.
relatively quiet.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you join us as some celebrities so it sounds cool back in Des Moines, Iowa? And every year I will go on as... The most sports guy I can do is Tom Arnold, because Tom used to have his own show, Best Damn Sports Show, period. And I'll go on and just do a couple hours of, you know what, Minneapolis is really crazy this week, and I was actually at a Cocaine Anonymous meeting last night with Brett Favre. I shouldn't say this out loud. Brett's got a bad coke problem, and actually Bob Costas is his sponsor. And again, I shouldn't say that out loud, but Bob's got a big problem with porn. And but anyways, and I'll just throw out names of celebrities
yeah, right.
and addictions that I can think of off the top of my head. And every year, and you can see this right now on Tom sure. Arnold's Twitter page, Tom fights people on Twitter who say, hey, it's supposed to be anonymous, man. You shouldn't say that. And every year he goes, did you notice that Sam Kinison was on the air? That guy's been dead for like 20 years, you idiot. Shut up.
Right.
And he fights with people to like clear the air. And it's hilarious.
You started out also one of your mentors back in the day. Now, the millennials are not going to know who I'm talking about, but George Carlin was a big force in your life near the end of his life.
Yeah.
And then the start of your career, you guys became friends. And for guys my age and a little older, George was a superstar at comedy.
George set the bar and offered to help me with my career. And
you kind of turned him down, right? You said not really turned him down. You were wanted to be his friend rather than have him
yeah.
as a benefactor.
I wanted a father figure. I wanted the friendship. And this is embarrassing, but I saved all his answering machine messages.
Oh, yeah?
I had
them on your machine.
Yeah, because it was back when the messages would be on a tape.
You're right.
And I saved all of George Carlin's answering machine messages. And I just wanted someone to answer questions about life. And he was just a really kind and...
Right.
And generous person, and a sports fan too. I remember he knew I was a Mariners fan. I'm one of seven Seattle Mariner fans out there, and he told me that he had just met Randy Johnson when Randy was pitching for the team. And he said, "Hey, if I send you a book, can you give it to Randy?" And I said, "Sure." And then I had to arrange with the Mariners for me to come to the Kingdom and
give him the book
to give Randy the book and take a picture to show George. And so that was kind of neat. Like, yeah, I'll be the middle guy between
George Carlin
and Randy
Johnson.
Yeah. And then Randy just came to see me 2 weeks ago at a venue called the Celebrity Theater in Phoenix, which is where I saw my first comedy show when I was 15 years old, which was George Carlin.
Oh, nice.
So George and Randy. Oh, that was amazing.
For those of you at home, we're talking with Craig Gass, comedian, entertainer, impressionist, voice guy.
Legit question to ask, who is this guy? with this weird facial hair.
Really, you can't even recognize your voice because you don't. I mean, you're somebody else's voice. Your voice is the voice of everybody, right?
Yeah, I love doing. I love hearing a good impression. I love doing impressions, and for me, it's the weirder the voice, the easier it is for me to do it. You know,
you've done. So many guys, you worked on Family Guy, and you were Al Pacino on Family Guy. You were, and so can you do like, can you do Peter from Family Guy? Can
you do
other characters, or do you stick
with
your
both, guys? And it's all in the story of how I creeped out Seth MacFarlane.
Okay.
My first time on, my first episode of Family Guy, I came in, and they asked me to do the voice of Al Pacino for a throwaway
Al Pacino. The joke was Al Pacino, since Al Pacino was a laundromat attendant or something like that.
I walk in and it's me and Seth MacFarlane. I'm a fan. And I'm already working on big shows. I've been on King of Queens. I've been on Sex and the City.
Sure, right.
But this is the first time I'm working on a show that I'm a fan of.
Yeah, right.
So I walk in and I go, oh, my God, it's Seth. And I'm nervous. I'm making jokes. And when Seth laughs, I laugh too loud. I go, I'm trying too hard. You know?
Right.
And we go in the studio, and Seth kept doing one line as Peter Griffin. We kept saying, this is crazier than when Al Pacino was a slumlord laundromat tenant. And then they cut to me as Al Pacino, surrounded by a bunch of broken down washers and dryers, going,
you're out of order. And you're out of order. And you're all out of order!
And I did that three times. And Seth MacFarlane, who was running the board, looked at me and he said, all right, I think we're good now. But I was nervous because I thought that we were going to be friends now that we're working together. And I go, hey, so you want to hang out? And he goes, what do you mean hang out? And I go, I don't know, you want to grab a coffee or something? And he goes, I got to work. And I said, all right, do you want me to leave? And he goes, yeah, get the hell out of here. And I go, I'm sorry. I grabbed my papers and I just...
You're a nice guy.
Yeah, and I walked out. And I didn't hear from them again for like 6 months. And then Linda, the casting director, started calling me every couple of months and saying, hey, Craig, can you do this voice? Can you do this voice? And I kept saying, yes. And every time I've been in since then, Seth MacFarlane is never around. It's always this guy, Mike Henry, who's the voice of Cleveland and the creepy old guy.
Right.
And every time I see Mike, I'll go, hey, Mike, is Seth around? And every time I see him, he goes, don't worry about Seth. We'll get you out of here real quick. Come on. We'll get you out of here real quick. That says everything. That says absolutely everything. But this is kind of a – I'm very tempted because everyone's got bags of food from a lot of my favorite places.
Listen.
In the food. We're literally outside a food court here in the Mall of America.
We are – yes, we are the center point of the sports world at a food court in the Mall of America. And we're not alone. Let's just put it this way. It's not like just you and me on an island.
This is going to be a wrestling match by the end of this week because – this is not a lot of space to let people walk in between.
Listen.
And there are mobs of people on Thursday and Friday.
On Thursday and Friday is when everybody can make it a long weekend. So everybody shows up on Thursday afternoon.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, the weekend here in Minneapolis, St. Paul, is going to turn into an anthill that's been kicked.
Yeah.
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 And this place in particular turns into there's nothing like it anywhere. There's really nothing like this anywhere. No other sport has this type of gathering where people like yourself can cross over and come into the sports world and be appreciated.
Which is why I love coming out to do it. And it's I'm a huge football fan, and I love being around the insanity. My shows that I do in the Super Bowl City every year are always filled up with people from the NFL. I've made a lot of friends in the NFL over the years. So it's just a cool hang. But but it is crazy. It is really – really insane. When I first heard they were coming to the Mall of America, I thought it was a joke. I didn't think they would really put all of us in the Mall of America. And then I was like, wait, we really are going to the
NFL doesn't joke about the Super Bowl.
Yeah, so, yeah, this is insane.
What else you got planned for the week? You know, you're doing your show, and what's the name of the place?
It's called New Hope Cinema Grill. We're doing shows, seven shows this weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then the following Monday.
Right,
and
you're then taking I'm Super Bowl Sunday off, are
taking
you?
Taking Super Bowl Sunday off, but I'm doing an event on Super Bowl Sunday with Ryan Leaf. We're doing an event called Sober Bowl, which is...
Ryan Leaf is coming on with us tomorrow.
I think two blocks away
today,
from where the Super Bowl is happening. We're doing a ramp-up to the Super Bowl and doing an event with a bunch of NFL guys who are in recovery. And I'm hosting this event, performing at it. There's some great music guests that are going to be there. It's just like this really fun hang, and it's I found out earlier this morning that There's half the tickets are already gone. I think the place only holds about 1,000 people. So SoberBowl.com.
Sober Bowl. I got you. Sorry about that.
But just search Sober Bowl Minneapolis, and you'll see the info. It's going to be at a place called the Muse Event Center.
Right.
This Sunday. Yeah, leading up. And you can actually hang out there. They got giant screens they're going to be showing the game at, so you can actually hang out there and watch the game.
With Craig Gass, comedian, voiceover, stand-up guy.
Football fan.
Football. Yeah, and I'm going to tell you, I don't do this very often. This is not me. That is a very cool...
Isn't it?
Russell Wilson. I mean, it's a jersey, not
touch
a jersey.
That. It's leather.
I know. It's leather. It's very nice. And
they sold this jersey in the... It's
comfortable, too. It's like a T-shirt, but it's not. You can get anything, man. This is...
Yeah, it's really crazy. They sold it in the...
How much did you pay for this Seahawk gear? Is this like, come on.
I want to say I paid $150 for it, maybe
$170. No way!
Yeah, yeah. And, yeah, all my... Every
That's
week,
unbelievable.
Every city that I go to, I get booked to do local TV.
Yeah.
And every time I get booked for local TV, I go, oh, I've got a, I'll put some nice on tomorrow, a nice dress shirt.
I
open up my suitcase. And every week I go, did I really only pack Seahawks jerseys, like, for the whole week? Like, all I pack is Seahawks and Mariners stuff. It's just the way that my football team plays on Sunday affects my mood for the next 7 days.
You've been afflicted, right.
I relate to the enthusiasm from the Bills fans, and I'm telling you, I've said this publicly many times, the Bills fans are the coolest fans in the NFL because of that commitment to breaking your own legs and setting yourself
on fire. Well, let me tell you, I'll give you a quick story, and I was telling Jay Harris, our producer, this. I was at the Pro Bowl. I did the Pro Bowl on radio this last weekend in Orlando on Sunday.
Oh, okay.
We were walking. You know, the Pro Bowl, if you've ever seen 2 seconds of it, it's a little bit of a practice game. A little inconspicuous. The guys stand each other up. So the intensity level's down.
Yeah.
We're walking in, and there was a Buffalo Bills tailgate going on. Bruce Smith jerseys, Thurman Thomas jersey, Jim Kelly jerseys. So I walk over. I'm a former Bill. I walk over.
Of course.
And they're like, hey, how's it going? Good. And I say, hey. And I knew it was the Pro Bowl because the intensity level was off. There was a folding table there, but it was not on fire. And nobody was jumping on it. They were very subdued, very happy to see me, really just kicking back. I knew it was the Pro Bowl then, you know, because the intensity wasn't there.
I like that, though. I like that even the Bills fans are not going to risk injury
right?
at the Pro Bowl.
Not the Pro Bowl.
They're going to do a soft
version. Have fun, but stay healthy.
Yeah, my goal right now in 2018 at the top of my list is I want to do more episodes of Family Guy and American Dad. I auditioned for Saturday Night Live last year for the first time. I'm hoping to get another shot at it this year. And right at the top of that list, I need to do a show in Buffalo during football season so I can experience...
You got to come to a home game.
I got to go to a game now. I've got to go to a home game. So that is my
goal. Listen, you reach out to our guys. We'll take care of you.
All right, cool.
Can get you. I know people.
And when I get there, I'm usually funny. So if you come to the show, something funny should happen. So I'm excited about coming to Buffalo. So.
Right, well, hey, thanks for coming on with us today. Craig
Thank
Gass,
you. Thank
you're
you,
going to be on stage here in Minneapolis. He's going to come to a Bills home game this next coming season.
Absolutely.
And all of that. Hopefully we cross paths once again, and we'll have you on back in Buffalo live as well when you get back in there. You come in next fall.
I'm in. I'm going to figure it out. Actually, I know a guy who owns a comedy club out there. I'm going to talk to him, or we'll coordinate. We'll make it happen.
And good luck this week as well. This is going to be – it's a madhouse.
Yeah, I got some funny videos I'm going to send you guys to post. You got to see –
let me do the most professional thing ever. Are we throwing it back to Murph? All right, we're going to send it back to you, Murph. Thanks, guys, for giving us this. Craig Gass, and we're back to you in Buffalo.
Crazy.
Thanks, guys.
What's happening, Craig? Thanks for being on the show with Steve. Steve is pretty funny himself, too, by the way.
Do you – I mean, you've been around a few comedians in your days.
A little bit.
How many?
I don't know. I mean, been around. I've met several, half a dozen, 10 maybe, over the years.
Biggest name?
I mean, I met Jerry Seinfeld.
Now, when you get around somebody like Jerry Seinfeld, do you feel obligated to try to be funny?
Oh, no. I go into a shell.
Do you?
Yeah. Professional comedians, those guys, they're monsters. I mean, you don't want to.
You start trying.
You can't go toe-to-toe with them. No. Do you? I mean,
I haven't been around too many comedians. Not at that level.
Yeah.
I've been around local guys.
Yeah.
But you do find, I mean, some of those guys are hilarious, but I never really tried to be funny with those guys.
It's like meeting LeBron and say, you want to play one-on-one? You want to go one-on-one? Yeah. No, you do not. Thanks to Steve and thanks to Craig Gass working the circuit out there, Radio Row in Minneapolis. We're going to head back to Steve in a couple of minutes, and he's going to be live with Solomon Wilcots, his CBS partner. Donald and I back here in Buffalo with a lot to talk about. We can talk about the Bills with some coaching moves that have been announced. I hear the music, so I guess we're going to break.
Yeah.
We're going back to Steve. Yeah, we're playing me off. We're back in a moment. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the crew here in Orchard Park. Steve Tasker and our producer Jay Harris out at Super Bowl. Sounds like they're having fun. I mean, that's Super Bowl stuff right there. Comedian stops by Radio Row and does a couple impressions. That's what Super Bowl is all about.
You've been on Radio Row. I've been on as a player, so I'm really just walking through answering questions. But for you, what's it like? I mean, you were there last year. What's it like when you have so many different people walking through? First of all, you want to interview different people.
Right.
But you can't get to them because they have five different security guards and handlers. They have their stylists and all types of people that are walking with them. And you're like, who is this person? Can I just talk to him? You get like the two security guards that you start to walk up to them and they just stop you.
Right.
And you're like, oh, you're looking around them trying to.
Yeah.
You know what I found? I just want to talk to him for a second.
Last year in Houston at Radio Row, and we were there for the week, just like Steve's going to do for this, I had a serious case of guest envy. So you're there doing your show, interviewing somebody, and you look over and, oh, why don't I have him on my show? Somebody at that table or that table or that table. Yeah. And you kind of lose focus. Who are you talking to? What are you talking to? This is a good guest right here. But no, I want that guest. Oh, no, I want to talk to him.
I remember from last year from the Combine. You know, you get all of the different teams. They're sitting all around, and it's like Radio Row.
Yeah,
so you get all of the – it is Radio Row. So you get all of the different teams sitting around at tables, and then you get the ESPN, NFL Network, the big networks. They got the big, you know, stages, and they get all of the great guests. And you're like, man, why can't we get him over here?
I know him. I'll go get him.
You're interviewing your person, looking up on the stage. Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot you were sitting here.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But they're doing it. Steve Tasker and our producer, Jay Harris, out there at the Super Bowl. You mentioned the Combine. Here comes news about the Combine, which, by the way, Donald, is 4 weeks away. We'll be there again in Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. So Central Florida linebacker Shaquem Griffin, he was a big story at the Senior Bowl last week. He has one hand, and Brownie talked about him. We talked about him. I mentioned to you during the break how I watched him play, and you really can't see anything, you know, any deficiency at all. He only has one hand because of a birth defect. Last week, the big story was he had not been invited to the Combine, but Griffin has posted on social media a quote that says, "I want to let you know that I got invited to the NFL Combine. Thank you for your support. The entire nation was behind me. I couldn't do it without you. Something special is coming soon, and you're going to see it. They've invited the right one to the Combine. I'm going to show you. I've got a lot to prove." No question he does. He's a good player at Central Florida. Held his own, from what I can tell, at the Senior Bowl. He had his left hand amputated when he was 4 years old, and a lot of people thought it was unfair that he didn't get the Combine invite, but he showed enough at the Senior Bowl that he has been invited to the Combine. That's kind of a nice story, a good story.
And is he a twin?
I'm not sure.
I know his brother plays for the Seahawks. I don't know if they're twins, though. His brother came out last year, I believe. You always see this when people that have different deficiencies or something that they're dealing with, they just figure out a way over time to deal with it and play through it. I remember there was back where I'm from in New Jersey, we played against this quarterback and he had one arm and he learned how to throw with his other hand and he was a very good quarterback, you know, and he had to do it all from shotgun and just catch the ball against his body, but he still was able to get it done and was a good quarterback for them. And so players like this, You can really only root for, but they have learned over time to just deal with it. We're just really like, man, that's amazing that you're able to do that. He's like, what? I've been doing this for a long time. Is there something wrong here? I mean, and if people like Jason Pierre-Paul can get it done, we've seen players play with like the cast on their arm, all of that stuff where they only have really one hand that they can use during the course of a game and they still are able to actually play. Then he can play in this game, and he has been a very good player for University of Central Florida down there. I'm happy to see him get this combine invite, and I only can pray and hope for the best for this young man, and hopefully he can go to the combine and just blow it out of the water, run some crazy 40 time, and then next thing you know, he's like getting drafted somewhere.
That'd be great. We'll watch that at the combine. We're there in 4 weeks. Donald and I here in Orchard Park today. Steve Tasker in Minneapolis covering the Super Bowl for us. He is on Radio Row at the Mall of America in Bloomington, Minnesota, and Steve joins us live right now with another guest. Steve Tasker, take it away.
Thanks, Murph. I'm sitting here with A.J. Verma, medical doctor, and also the chief medical officer of United Neuroscience. I say that right?
Absolutely.
And you guys are here, fittingly, at the Super Bowl this week, announcing plans for the first clinical trials for a vaccine for CTE. How is I mean, that's one of your goal now in your announcement now, but what are some of the other things you've already been working on? This is just one more thing in a long line of studies you guys are running.
Yeah, so thanks for having me on.
Certainly.
We're trying to take the vaccine approach and apply it to chronic diseases, not just infectious diseases. You know, we've all been vaccinated against infectious diseases.
Sure.
Well, the immune system can also fight off other diseases. It's just been hard to do that safely, to vaccinate somebody against their own self, against bad proteins or disease-causing things. We figured out a way to do that. So our lead program is in trials in Alzheimer's disease, in phase two trials. We should get a readout later this year.
Let me just interject. That's how I met you, through the Alzheimer's disease. I have a family member that's afflicted with it. And
yes.
Solomon Wilcox will join us in a few moments after we finish with you. But this is pretty exciting stuff, to be able to vaccinate someone against a disease that is a chronic disease. It's different than infectious disease.
Exactly. And it's also, if you look at the burden of Alzheimer's disease, so big that the expensive medicines that we have now really don't fit for that disease. Whereas vaccine approach is more pragmatic. It can reach worldwide. It can be used in a preventative way.
Right.
So we're very excited about it. It's been a challenge to do. We found a safe way to do it. We're very excited about it. But simultaneously, what's turning out is that a lot of the same targets for our vaccines that occur in Alzheimer's or Parkinson's, turns out some of those targets may actually occur in the brains of players that have had multiple head injuries.
Which is why CTE comes
exactly
involved.
So at an autopsy, we find that those patients who had symptoms of CTE actually have some of these same lesions that are found in Alzheimer's disease. So we think, since we're developing therapeutics there, why not also attack CTE?
What's the next step? What are you guys looking to do? I mean, you said next year you're going to start clinical trials. Are you looking at volunteers? You're looking, and
well,
what kind of demographic would
question.
You?
We're in preclinical testing right now. There's some animal models that we're looking at. We actually have the technology. I think what's missing is better understanding of CTE. Who's at risk? What stage are they at? We've only seen the pathology at postmortem, but now there's new biomarkers that are emerging, ways to image the brain and actually see the pathology while you're alive, blood tests. As soon as those emerge, then we have a goalpost. We have ways to actually find the right people, see if they're doing better or worse on therapy versus, placebo.
Right.
Those are the tools that we need. We think that's going to happen in the next 2 or 3 years. And we're poised to actually bring our therapy and intersect with those advancements and get into clinical trials.
Dr. A.J. Verma, Chief Medical Officer at United Neuroscience, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Good luck
with these trials. Murph, we're going to throw it back to you, and we're going to switch seats, and we're going to have Solomon Wilcox, a colleague of mine with CBS for a lot of years, now doing work with United Neuroscience as well. So, A.J., thanks for being here.
My
Murph,
pleasure.
Go ahead.
Thank you.
All right. Steve Tasker from the Super Bowl. That's an interesting concept of vaccination to prevent CTE. They got to dive on that, see if that might work, right?
You have to.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much talk of CTE. I wouldn't be shocked if the league hasn't already started to really look into something like this and see if it's something that they need to I don't know if you can enforce it on the players, but at least have it as an option. Look, this is something that can possibly prevent you from getting CTE. Maybe you should try it.
Yeah, try it. Absolutely. Steve Tasker is with us at the Super Bowl in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Steve also has a conversation that we will play a little bit later on with Sal Palantonio from ESPN. And we've got Mike Waffle, retiring Bills defensive line coach, lined up to be joining us on the show on the telephone at 2 o'clock today. Steve's killing it out there at the Super Bowl, though.
He's doing
a heck of a job.
Steve is. I mean, he's Steve Tasker.
He's Steve Tasker.
I know he wants to act all humble and all that stuff, but people love Steve Tasker. He's been on TV for, 20-plus years now. Everybody thinks he should be in the Hall of Fame, and he's a great guy. And so people are like, I'll do anything for you, Steve.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Our producer, Jay Harris, told me this morning on the phone that part of the challenge, it turns out this week, is Steve's out there lining up interviews with Jay, doing a great job, but people want to interview Steve. And Jay's got to tell him, Steve's got his own work to do. Maybe after he's done with our little show, he can do it. But people want to talk to Steve Tasker.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you?
Right.
One of the greatest special teamers of all time, 4 Super Bowls he played in, including one there in Minnesota. He's big time out there.
And Jay has to negotiate now.
You know,
he can come on your show if you do our show.
Jay can be his handler.
Exactly.
running interference for Steve Tasker. We're going to toss it back to Steve in a moment, and let's do it right now. Steve Tasker standing by, and Radio Row at the Super Bowl. Steve, there you go.
Thanks, Murph. I appreciate it. I'm with one of my buds from – we were together at CBS for, you know, 17, 18 years. You've been in broadcast for 25. I've just finished my 20th year.
Yeah.
We were former players in
congratulations.
College.
Congratulations. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, congratulations to me for being old. I'll tell you this, Drew. Solomon and I have been friends for a long time, and when I first started at CBS, one of the guys I called – and still did, even late in the year – I'd call Solomon for advice. I'd call you up and say, listen, bro, what do I do about this? You know, this situation you get into with players and coaches in our production meetings where they'd give us information. I'd say, well, what do I do with this? And Solomon, you were always great. They'd give me advice on how to handle it.
Well, you were always great. You were always class act, easy to work with. You know how to take a situation that could be a lot of pressure, whether it's in those production meetings with players and coaches, quarterback, and you just know how to make it just a real conversation, and you help others to have fun.
It was fun, too, because you were Super Bowl 47. We always hear about it, that you were on the sideline with the Baltimore Ravens because you do their preseason
packages, right? I was over
on the sidelines of the San Francisco 49ers. And there's like 13:20 to go left in the third quarter, and the lights go out.
Yeah,
I gotta tell you, Solomon's like, you thought the worst. You were like, I'm out of here. Something bad's happening. I wasn't that smart. I was standing going, oh, look, somebody leaned up against a light switch. So Solomon was with us, the CBS on that coverage of that Super Bowl as the lights went out.
It was amazing. I didn't know what was happening. I didn't know if this was another 9/11 or if somebody just tripped over a wire.
Right.
We didn't know.
Right.
And no one would tell us anything.
Nobody did.
And so they put us on and said, you guys, just talk. No one seemed to have a plan, but, you know, we were calm. We stuck with it. And it turned out to be a memorable night, to say the least.
Yeah, no question about it. And I'll tell you this, too. And for those of you who don't remember the game, San Francisco 49ers lost to the Baltimore Ravens in that Super Bowl.
Yeah.
But the Ravens were way up at the time when the lights went out.
And the 49ers came
back. And I think a large part because of that blackout.
In fact, during the time when the lights were out, I had to do some reporting, so I ran over to
I had my feet up and bringing coffee.
I went to talk to John Harbaugh, the coach of the Ravens. His brother is Jim Harbaugh, who's coach of the 49ers. And so I said, what do you tell your guys? And he said, I don't know. What do you tell them? And I said, me? I said, well, coach, you know the coach on the other side as well as anybody. That's your little brother.
Yeah.
I said, you don't think he's going to get his team back into this game? He's going to try to take advantage of this situation and get his team back in the game. And you and I have played in enough games to know those are the moments where things can – they're going well for you, but that can really turn the tide in terms of momentum. Right. And I thought that would happen, and that's exactly how it turned out.
Well, you know, and we saw it in last year's Super Bowl with these Patriots where they were down 28-3. And I was in part of the greatest comeback of all time with – Philly offensive coordinator Frank Reich.
That's right. That's
what happens in those comeback games like it did in Super Bowl 47 and last year in Super Bowl 51 with the Patriots and the Falcons, it's not just one team coming back. The other team shuts it down.
They shut it down.
And that's what happened in 47 with the Ravens. They just wanted that game to be over so they could be world champions.
That's right.
Last year, nobody comes back on the Falcons. They were a juggernaut. They were going to keep scoring points. You couldn't score fast enough. And so they shut it down a little bit. And that's what it is. It's one team dropping off and the other team kind of pushing hard and being desperate. When you're in those situations, particularly in playoff games, you're a good team. And when you turn it into desperation mode, you're tough to stop, particularly by a team who's not really trying
hard. And
then
I thought Kyle Shanahan didn't want to appear to be conservative. Didn't want to just, you know, run the ball and get out of there. So what do? They call a pass play. Devontae Freeman misses a block.
Yeah.
And then they hit Matt Ryan.
It
starts snowballing.
Yeah.
And it's almost like you can't get out of your own way.
Yeah.
I've never was on that side of it, but you were in games where you guys came back on people.
Yeah, yeah.
And you could just see it happening, man.
There was even in the greatest comeback ever, the one with Frank Reich.
Yeah.
It got to a point, and of course you can say it now because it worked out. We got to a point where saying we were down, still down, maybe double digits or at least a touchdown.
But you knew.
It's over. We're going to win.
Yeah, yeah.
We are going to win the game. And so let's talk about this game this weekend now. You got two teams, and you got to tip your hat not only to the Patriots for all the stuff they've accomplished over the course of Bill Belichick's time there and Tom Brady's illustrious career. Maybe he's the greatest of all time. And the fact that they're like Dracula, they don't die.
They keep coming back.
You can drive a stake through their heart, maybe you got a chance.
That's right.
But do you see anything, and we were talking about this earlier in the show, Bill Belichick seems to have kind of appreciating things a little bit this time around. A little emotion coming out
that.
Of him.
I can see
and
that.
And I said, you know, you win this one. He's 66. He said he ain't going to do it when he's 70. Got a Tom Brady, and the article in Sports Illustrated comes out about it. He might be saying, well, you know what? Maybe I'll just pull the rip. But what do you think about it? I mean, do you think to see the end at all for this run that they've had over almost two decades?
You know, for Tom Brady, even though he's 40, if he wins the Super Bowl, he'll be the only quarterback to win Super Bowl at the age of 40. It certainly we're getting close to the end. I watched Bill Belichick do a sit-down in this new 30 for 30 feature. He and Bill Belichick.
The two Bills.
And I remember a time when, and you covered Coach Belichick for a long time, so did I. You've been in those meetings with him. I remember there was a time you couldn't get him to sit down for a production meeting. And now, you're right, he's starting to do things that he never would do before. He's allowing himself to enjoy it. And I look at him and I say, I think he's getting close to the end. There's no doubt that he's going to make sure it's well documented, okay, what he means to the game and what the game means to him. Doing these sit downs that he would never do before. I think he's sort of smelling the roses. Not that he's done working, because he's still a hard worker.
Listen,
but he's allowing himself to smell the roses.
You're right, and I tell you that we can say that all we want. I mean, about how he's a different guy. He was so far on the other end. I mean, he was different than Tom Coughlin. Tom Coughlin was this guy that, you know, it was like tension everywhere. I don't think there's that much tension in their building in Foxborough at Patriot Place.
Yeah.
There's not tension, but there is a level of seriousness and a level of grind it out.
A level of intensity in the day-to-day process.
I think when you see a crack in that, as we both think that you're seeing now, particularly in his outward appearance, I think it lends itself, plus the good grief. It's been 17 years or 18 years of him doing this with that level of intensity and that level of success. You know, I think if you're a guy like Bill Belichick, if you and I are, certainly we would have pulled the ripcord 10 years ago and be living with our
feet
up already.
I'm good.
Him, I think there's come to a time when you want to sit back and say, you know what, I want to still be young enough to go out and do other things. I want to recreate. I want to spend time with my family. I want to spend time traveling. I want to go out and maybe talk to other teams now and say, this is how we did this. This is how we did that. And you know he'll be very sought after as a consultant.
Oh, he'll be sought after by Fortune 500 companies.
Absolutely.
Just because his organization, his leadership, his attention to detail, his ability to pull everything together.
Right.
Like, you know how he coaches situations. Like, third, if this happens in the game and we've got the ball on the 21-yard line, we got 1 minute left in the game, no timeouts, here is what we do. Like, he's playing chess, and everyone else is playing checkers.
That's right. And for you and I to sit here and talk about this, you're right. He would be in high demand. But I think at a point after that, you know, he can set his own agenda to do other things.
I agree.
There's no question that money is not an issue for him because he could command his own price for appearances and speeches and seminars
books.
And books.
Absolutely.
He'll certainly be able to do and live the kind of life he wants to live.
Yeah.
I think it comes down to what he wants to do now. And I think it'll be interesting to see what he wants to do. I mean, you see a guy like Peyton Manning, who is the same kind of thing as a player.
Yeah.
He kind of stepped away from them. You don't see it. He does commercials.
Yeah.
But, you know, I know what it's like to do commercials. It's not like it's a seven-day-a-week job.
It's not a job, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think guys like that, they got something they want to do, and I think it'll be interesting to see what a guy like Bill. Now, we're talking about how he's already.
He's got to win this game
first,
right?
It may be 20. He may be doing this for another 5 years, who knows. But certainly he's at a point where he could stop and smell the roses and still be a very accomplished, the most accomplished.
Yeah, I think what people need to understand is that Bill Belichick grew up the son of a coach. It was something he had always done. But, you know, he has a degree in economics. He's a brilliant man. The guy can read a spreadsheet. You know, he understands components in terms of how to put it all together, and he knows how to help every single player be better. So his contribution, I think, would have been a successful one even had he not sure. gone into coaching.
We're on the John Murphy Show talking with Steve Tasker. I'm talking with longtime broadcast and a colleague of mine, Solomon Wilcots, about the Super Bowl this year and other times that we're actually just kind of shooting the breeze, so I hope you don't mind.
That's right.
One of the things I know, let's talk about this game, the Patriots and the Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
I anticipate a very good game because the Eagles are multi-talented, multifaceted. They spread the football around offensively. They're a handful on that side of the ball, even with Nick Foles as a backup quarterback stepping in. This is a guy that was drafted as a number one prospect, and all those guys, they got the height, the weight, the arm strength, and the savvy. I mean, he's a top draft pick because he's got all the measurables. He's a physical specimen and can sling it.
Sure.
And they got him pulling the trigger for Philly, so they're not going to miss a beat offensively. But they're playing the Patriots who set the beat. You know,
that's
so
right.
Forget about missing it.
Yep.
I think this is going to be a very good Super Bowl. I think it's going to be ultra competitive and difficult to call.
I think it's going to be a really good game. And we all know what the Patriots bring to the table. They have the greatest quarterback, arguably, to ever play the game. They have the number one offense. Tom Brady led the league in passing as a 40-year-old. And they have the league's number one ranked offense, averaging 28 points a game. Now, having said all of that, we know how great they are. The Eagles' defense is one of the best in the league. They have the best run defense. Fletcher Cox is a guy that's difficult to block. He can wreck and ruin your day. So defensively, I think they have everything that it takes. They have the league's number one ranked rushing offense with LeGarrette Blount, a former Patriot, and Jay Ajayi. He's great. I think if they can run the ball and play the defense and put pressure on Tom Brady, I think we got ourselves a football game.
I think that's right. I think it's the way you beat the Patriots in the past has been like the Giants did it, quick pressure with four guys.
There
everybody else is in pass
coverage,
and we'll
see. Right.
So,
that's right.
Solly, thanks for stopping
You're
by,
the
man.
Best,
great
my
seeing
man.
You.
Thanks for having me.
We'll go back to the John Murphy Show. Thanks, guys. We'll talk to you.
Okay. Steve Tasker joining us from Super Bowl Radio Row with his old buddy Solomon Wilcots.
You can tell that they're buddies. The old buddies, they just start talking back and forth like they're sitting on the couch or at a bar somewhere having some drinks talking.
Yeah, I didn't see any drinks.
No drinks there, but right later.
We're going to take a break. We're back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy and Donald Jones here. Steve Tasker covering the Super Bowl with us and chewing up most of our airtime. Donald, I feel like a fifth wheel here. What are we doing?
Fifth wheel.
What are we doing here?
Oh, man, no, guys, I wish I had somebody to be here with me.
We're here, and we've got coming up in the next hour, we're going to talk with Mike Waffle, who just announced his retirement late yesterday as defensive line coach for the Buffalo Bills. Bill Tierlink is his replacement. We'll talk with Mike Waffle about his 20 years in the NFL as an assistant. He's been good to us. He's been on the show two or three times, right, over the last year.
Yeah, great personality.
Great personality.
Right. You really wouldn't know. If you walked past him, you wouldn't know he had that type of personality because he kind of gives you like a certain stare where you're like, ooh.
Yeah.
And then obviously we all know him from
Hard Knocks.
Was that Hard Knocks?
Yeah,
that was Hard Knocks.
I don't think he liked that. I don't think he liked the fact that people associated him with that.
They painted him in a bad light.
Yeah. We'll talk with him about that. Mike Waffle standing by to join us live here on the line in a couple of minutes, plus more, hopefully more from the Super Bowl. We may hear from Steve and Sal Palantonio coming up in the next hour and a couple of other things coming up. And maybe we revisit our discussion about the catch rule. Roger Goodell says it looks like it's time to do something about the catch rule. All of that coming up in the third and final hour of the show. If you have comments, questions on any of this, the Super Bowl, the catch rule, what the NFL should do, Mike Waffle's retirement, other changes here at One Bills Drive, including Eric Wood yesterday. Phone lines are open. I promise we'll get some calls on the air in the third and final hour. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Come on back. John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports update.
Update from One Bills Drive. The Buffalo Bills with a couple of coaching moves. They have promoted defensive line assistant Bill Tierlink to the new job as defensive line coach. Tierlink came to the Bills in the Sean McDermott crew came in a year ago, was last year's assistant defensive line coach, spent several years before that as a defensive line coach at the University of Nevada, and spent five seasons with the Indianapolis Colts as a defensive assistant. Bill Tierlink, the new defensive line coach, he replaces Mike Waffle, who announced his retirement late yesterday. Waffle ending a 20-year career in the National Football League, the last of it with the Buffalo Bills this past season. We're standing by to talk with Mike Waffle live on the telephone line just a minute or two from now. The Bills have also promoted Sean McDermott's assistant, Aaron Whitecotton, to assistant defensive line coach to back up Tierlink. Reports out there, mostly from Alex Marvez, that the Bills are ready to hire a new defensive backfield coach, John Butler, who spent the last four seasons as the Houston Texans' secondary coach. He would replace Gil Bird. Those reports unconfirmed, but reported by Alex Marvez. Around the NFL, Blake Bortles, Jacksonville quarterback, had surgery on his throwing wrist over the last week or so. The injury on his throwing hand, it makes Jacksonville's decision on what to do with Bortles all that more interesting. They picked up his option, but the option's injury guarantee was not discussed. The Titans, with their coaching moves, Mike Vrabel, the new head coach, has named his coordinators. Matt LaFleur is the new offensive coordinator, and the Titans have named veteran coach Dean Pease as their defensive coordinator. The Buffalo Sabres start a five-game homestand tonight at home against the New Jersey Devils. That's a 7 o'clock faceoff at KeyBank Center. Sabres come in with a three-game win streak that began with three wins in their Western Canada road swing last year. UB Bulls hit the road with a 10-game, or looking to get to a 10-game win streak. They won nine in a row. They're at Kent State tonight at 7 o'clock. They're at the midway point of conference play. That is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy and Donald Jones from our One Buffalo studio. Steve Tasker covering the Super Bowl for us. We hope to get back to Steve in the third and final hour of the show. But as we said, news coming here from One Bills Drive today. And the news late yesterday came out that Mike Waffle has announced his retirement. Defensive line coach for the Bills this past season. 20 years in the National Football League as an assistant and about 19 years before that as a college assistant. And we are happy to have Mike Waffle on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline with us. Coach, thanks for joining us. Good afternoon. It's John Murphy and Donald here in Orchard Park.
Hey, thanks a lot, John. Hello, Donald.
Good to have you with us, and congratulations. What a great career. Mixed emotions at all on this, or tell me about this decision-making process.
Well, outside your office was a chair on a daily basis that I used to have to sit on in the indoor facility because of the pain that I was dealing with on a daily basis, you know, whether it was my knees, my ankle, my foot mainly. I had two major surgeries on my foot and my back, you know, over the last 4 years, and it's taken its toll on my body, and so it was more of a physical decision than anything else.
Now that kind of sinks, and it strikes me that's kind of an occupational hazard, Coach. Right? I mean, I can't tell you how many coaches I've seen towards the end of their careers just sort of limping around. A lot of them dealing with hip issues. That's what happens when you're on the field for years and years, like you have been, huh?
Yeah. Well, I was more like a skinny, defensive end that shouldn't have played defensive line. That just took its toll on me over the years, and so I've been, you know, dealing with those issues, and so I talked to Coach McDermott 2 days after our game. It was a Tuesday morning, and I just explained to him that it was hard for me physically, and I read him a paragraph, you know, Jack Youngblood wrote about, you know, dealing with pain and those things, and I says I feel like this paragraph. This is what I have to deal with, and I said I'm making that decision to retire.
Coach, have you used that throughout the years, or at least this year, when you're speaking to your defensive linemen when, you know, they're tired because they're working so hard or something like that, and you're like, look, all right, I'm going through all types of pain being out here with you, so I don't want to hear anything you guys are going through.
I never really used that. I just told them to suck it up and get tough.
Yeah. You had a pretty good group here, Coach, your 1 year in Buffalo. Can you talk about that group that you had here in your single season with the Bills?
Oh, I loved it. I mean, I'll never forget that locker room in Miami, and I was standing right behind Kyle Williams, and you know, and Reed and Gray, his sons, were right there, and just the joy that he was experiencing, the joy in my heart that he had the opportunities to reach the playoffs finally as a Buffalo Bill, and that alone was the highlight of my career, just experiencing that in Buffalo. And unfortunately, Maynard, who parks us, you know, before the game,
yes,
at the airport.
Yep.
Well, Maynard always saved me a spot because of my foot, you know, and he always got me close. But at Miami game, he forgot, and I got jammed way in the back, but fortunately for me, I was one of the last ones out of the airport, and to see those fans and their faces at that time, and it was 6 degrees outside, and after that Miami game, and the joy they had in their heart, and being out there and supporting the Buffalo Bills, it was those moments you're never going to forget. The defensive line themselves, though, I think, you know, I've talked to all of them, and I said they're going to be in great hands with Bill Turlink. Bill, you know, I allowed him to do a lot of teaching in the classroom this year. When I was working with the defensive ends, he worked with the defensive tackles. When I worked with the defensive tackles, he worked with the defensive ends. And, you know, Coach asked me if he was ready, and I said, he's more than ready, Coach. He can command the room, and he's going to do an outstanding job. And Aaron Whitecotton, you know, I've known Aaron, you know, when he was a defensive line assistant in Jacksonville, and he's going to bring a new element. And he was a center at South Carolina. He worked on our offense this year. So he's going to bring that element into that defensive line room. And so I explained to all the guys, I said, you're in great hands. And so, you know, I'm passing the torch. I love you guys. I miss you. But I had a chance to talk to every one of them. And I was really proud of him. I was, you know, if I just went down the line and just said, you know, Shaq lost, and Shaq just grew more as a person in the classroom. I mean, the confidence level he gained, and, you know, how he was answering questions and the knowledge he gained of the game. And, you know, he was coming along as a player. As unfortunately he got hurt, and Eddie Yarbrough just played, you know, high energy bunny, you know, and he just really helped us, you know, and he played really well in Jacksonville. And you go down and think about Kyle and you know, how well he played at the end. And then with him and third down with Lorenzo Alexander working with our unit and the two captains out there and trying to get as much pass rush as we could, you know, as we got out there. And people were getting the ball out of their hands and seven-man protecting us a lot. But it was fun working, you know, with those two guys. Just a highlight, you know, going through with that experience and their character, number one. Their leadership, number two, you know, it's just fun to be able to work with. And then, you know, the development of you know, Alonzo Dorfus Washington, you know, yeah. I mean, he, you know, I call A-Dub all the time, you know, I just think about it for a second.
Yeah.
But you know, he really came along and got better at that position. And, you know, Jerry Hughes, you know, it was unfortunate that, you know, he received a lot of double teams and triple teams. He should have been a double-digit, you know, sack, you know, and he had the opportunity so many times. He was right there hitting the quarterback, and it was so close, and could have got higher accolades, you know, if some of those triples turned into home runs. And, you know, it was just fun. And Ryan Davis was just great. I could rely on him playing all the way up and down the line. I could put him in any position at any given time. He's very smart and just really a great fit for us, you know, that way. And It was just a good year, you know, it really was. And, you know, we were able to represent us well in Jacksonville and holding the 10 points that day. And it was just a really good unit. They always played hard. They always played tough. And the thing I was probably most proud of, you know, John and Donald, is the fact that they're a brotherhood of men. And they just loved each other. And they talked about how they couldn't wait to get to work. And that brotherhood was just special, really special. Saturday nights, we used to circle the chairs up, and they would talk, and they express themselves. And man, if you ever had a camera on that, and you were a fly on the wall, you would be so proud of what they said, and how much they loved each other, and how much they're going to play for each other. It's really that those things that I'll never forget being a Buffalo Bill.
Coach, you talk about the guys and the brotherhood. You talk about that moment in Miami being one of the highlights of your career when you're standing there with Kyle and his sons and you get to see those guys go through that. I'd imagine that the pain that you were going through throughout the course of the season, you weren't feeling any of that at that point.
No, I wasn't. I mean, it was kind of funny because I had a folding chair at the end of the bench next to a Gatorade cooler during the game, and I had to sit down during the game, you know, and they used to call it my office, you know. And I'd be down there looking at the iPad, and I'd wave him to come down and go, oh, shoot, we got to go to his office, you know. So I'd come down and sit on the Gatorade cooler and go through the pictures and stuff, you know. But it was fun. We had fun with it. You know, they knew that I was hurting, and I tried to hide as much as I could, but it is what it is. I mean, I was watching Yes Network and Center Stage, Bill Parcells was on there. they asked him, they said, after you retired, they said, they tried to talk you back in. And, you know, I'm not sure what job it was. They wanted to come out of retirement. He said, did you ever consider coming out of retirement? And he said, no, I didn't. He said, it's a young man's game. You know, it's a young man's game. And I just started, you know, decided to stay in retirement. I mean, that's, well, you know, those words go in your head and you start thinking about it. You know, it's kind of added up.
With Mike Waffle, who announced his retirement late yesterday as the Bills defensive line coach, 20 years in the NFL, coaching various positions, mostly defensive line. Hey, Coach, I was thinking about that. You say it's a young man's game, and in your 20th and final year, your only year here in Buffalo, you got some great veterans, but a guy like Eddie Yarbrough, you know, just breaking into the league, all that energy, all that enthusiasm, all that joy, what does that do to a veteran coach like yourself when you see a guy wide-eyed and eager to learn and ready to go out there and play his heart out every day? What's that do to a veteran coach when you have a player like that in your room?
Well, John, you know, Eddie was there at like 6 o'clock in the morning watching film every day in the D-line room, and he earned his stripes. Football paid him back. Aaron Donald was a lot like that at the Los Angeles and St. Louis Rams, you know, and I told Eddie that, you know, and both of them had success as young players, and that's a big part of it. And, you know, he put some more effort into it off the field, too.
And you mentioned a moment ago how the moment in Miami this past year was one of your great moments in the league. You won a Super Bowl with the Giants, 5 sacks on Tom Brady. Back in, 2008, I think, January of 2008, February 2008. That has to rank up there as one of your great moments, huh?
Of course it was. You know, I being able to coach Michael Strahan and O.C. Umanyar and Justin Tuck and others, you know, to be able to win the world championship with Coach Tom Coughlin and that staff, great staff. I mean, I just love that team, you know, and being with Eli and everybody. And I just go on and on about that team, but I, you know, the thing is, John, you always want to be able to earn that world championship ring, and I know this. The thing is so darn big, and it's hard to wear, and it sits in a safe in my home in California. But it came to the point after that happened. I used to tell the D linemen all the time, and I told these guys the same thing, you know, all the time. I told them, I said, you know, what it's all about is that for me coaching is that you get the opportunity to have that confetti fall on your head. You know, I said, you need that. That is just, can't define it. I mean, Justin Tuck and I walked across the line onto the sideline, onto the field together. And after that Super Bowl victory, and we just looked at each other and that confetti was falling on our heads. And like, are you kidding me? I mean, you know, it's just, it was the greatest feeling ever. And the thing that I said to them, I said, you know, it's, you get that experience, and I'll give you an example of what happened last year after the Patriots game. I get a text message 20 minutes after the game, and it's a picture of Chris Long with confetti on his head because he just won the world championship with the Patriots, you know, and I coached him in St. Louis, and he said, you were right. So,
that's cool.
And that is, you know, kind of cool. And so that was what it was all about. I know just in that locker room, and I was kind of just beside myself, but I was so happy for all the Bills and coaches and, you know, players that really hadn't been there before. And that locker room, as good as, you know, a Super Bowl win is, but you all kind of trickle in and you kind of, you know, have joy, and it's just spread throughout time after that game.
Right.
When that golden moment happened in that Cincinnati game, and we knew that we won the game, and everybody at one time, coaches and players and personnel, all celebrated at the same time, the energy in that room will never be replaced. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. It makes incredible sense, yeah. Coach Mike Waffle on the line with us. What's next for you, Coach? I know you've got the pain and the health issues, but what do you think retirement will look like for you? What are you going to do?
Well, I'm taking care of my girlfriend for 48 years. She's been my girlfriend, and we just celebrated our 45th. And,
congratulations.
We're having a blast. You know, she's been there for me forever. You know, I mean, she started out with me in the United States Marine Corps, you know, and she's been there forever. And Kathy just needs to be, you know, the kingpin and be able to really enjoy our life together in real marriage. You know, we've been married 45, been together 22 and a half. But, you know, I think that's where we're having our energy. So I just met with Susan Branton in NFL retirement office this morning. I'm sitting here looking at the Baltimore Harbor, you know, in Baltimore right now. But
cool.
We're on our first leg of a journey back to our house in Los Angeles. We're going to retire in L.A. Okay. Our oldest daughter and granddaughter are in our home and up in the Bay Area. You know, I got that when I was at the Raiders. And then our youngest daughter, Marsha, is up in Alaska, okay, with our other two grandchildren. And so we're going to spend a lot of time with them on the West Coast, you know, and we get out there in about another 9 or 10 days. We're heading down through Virginia and Alabama to see two of my Marine Corps buddies in New Orleans, San Antonio.
So you're driving out west. You're going to drive all the way west. Wow.
I'm driving all the way. Yeah, I'm driving out. And, and I'm going to go to Tombstone and spend a couple of days there. My brother's in Prescott, Arizona, and then back to Wood Ranch in Sweetie Valley, California.
So, what a great trip. Wow. That sounds like a fantastic trip. Hey, one more thing to ask you, Coach, before we let you go, and we thank you for spending so much time with us here today. But you mentioned how you'd set up in your meeting room Saturday nights before the game the circle of chairs. Now, I think many – and I've seen that. I've seen you set those chairs.
You
I
have.
Think,
after Mass.
After Mass in the hotel.
That's right.
I think many fans might think that the night before a game it's all technical chalkboard stuff and film room stuff and look at this and, hey, if the Patriots do this, we do this. You had a different approach with that circle of chairs, didn't you?
Yeah, well, you know, we always did that with Coach Frazier and of course, Coach McDermott, you know, I think are two outstanding coaches, by the way. And they, you know, they do in their business, they're part of it. But that was our D-line meeting. And the guys loved it. And I've done it for years. You know, I did it in college. And it builds such a brotherhood of men. It's so cool as it grows. It starts out like a mustard seed. And they just keep getting closer and closer. And the things that they say, holy cow, I wish I videoed it. And it was really neat. Before the Jacksonville game, we had the circle of chairs, and Coach Frazier was in the other side of the room and watching film. And he heard it all, and then he came up to me later and talked to me. He says, wow, that was powerful, you know. And I wish there could be a camera there. You know, that would have been more important than Hard Knocks. Remember that?
Yeah.
And those moments will always be special. I am going to write a book. I'm writing
good.
A book. I've planned this for years. No assistant coach has ever really done it. So I'm just going to, you know, it's going to be the life of assistant coach, but the name of the book is going to be Better Than Working for a Living.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's true. But I named the days of the week. I called it Monster Monday, Terrible Tuesday, Warrior Wednesday, Tough Guy Thursday, Feel Good Fast Friday, Super Saturday, and Game Day.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm excited about that.
That sounds great. Coach, we look forward to that book. We look forward to crossing paths with you again. I hope we do, but you got a great trip planned in the car with your wife, driving all the way out west. That's going to be fantastic.
No, it will be. And, you know, Coach McDermott asked me to come to, you know, training camp, St. John Fisher. And so it's a possibility we'll see each other then.
We'd like to see you there. Right, thanks, Coach. Good luck to you. Congratulations.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot for having us on the show. And appreciate you. Appreciate you, John. Appreciate you, Donald.
Thanks, Coach. Coach Mike Waffle, lifer, 20 years in the NFL, 19 years before that in college football. He was joined us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, Subway Eat Fresh. You know, I saw that this past season. He's only with us the 1 year, but he set up so they have masses, you know, and church services on the road in the hotel. And typically the mass would be in his meeting room, and he would set up the chairs in a circle.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally, after a couple of games this year, said, what's going on? What are you doing? He said, this is how we meet on Saturday nights. And we talked about it that night. It was just it surprised me. I thought it was all chalk talk stuff Saturday night.
No, every coach has a different approach.
Yeah.
And Coach Waffle said he's been doing this since college, but – you know, that's something that you need, because when you preach, family, I want this to be about a family. I want you guys to know each other, all of that stuff. But everything is business all the time. Where's the family come in to play,
right,
Coach? Like, I mean, the only time we get to talk is when we're in the locker room or something like that, or if we actually do it when we get back to Buffalo and we're on our own time. So the fact that the coach himself is setting it up so that I want you guys to talk. And if we have issues, any of that stuff, we need to talk about it right now. Whatever it is that you guys want to get off your chest, let's talk about it right now. That's a great thing.
1 year here, and 1 year, I think Mike Waffle made a pretty strong impression, obviously, on me, on us, you know, on the outside looking in. But within that locker room, within his group, that defensive line group, I think he made a very strong impression. And we wish him well. I think he's earned this retirement, certainly.
It's the biggest thing he said there, and you're talking about, he talked about the players and things that he's done and seen throughout his career. The biggest thing that sticks with me, and people always ask me if I would like to be a coach, they always say, well, how come so-and-so isn't a coach? Or they'll ask Steve, how come you're not a coach? The biggest thing he said there is he's been with his wife. He's been married for 40-plus years.
Yeah, 40,
he's been with his wife,
years.
Though, for 20-plus
yeah.
years.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
lets you know the life of a coach. You yeah. don't get to see your family like that. And yeah. so now he's like, look, I'm going to go spend time with my wife and my kids and grandkids now. And that's really it.
I look forward to his book. I hope it turns out. I'd love to read that book. Mike Waffle joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Retires as defensive line coach. 1 year with the Bills. 19 years before that in the NFL. 19 years before that in college football. The Bills promoting Bill Teerling to a defensive line coach to take his place. All right. Going to reset here. We have time to talk with you if you have thoughts or comments on the Super Bowl, comments on the coaching moves that the Bills have made, comments on Eric Wood yesterday, his announcement yesterday, whatever you'd like to talk about, maybe even the catch rule. Roger Goodell says they're going to take another look at that. We will open up some phone lines if you have thoughts on that. 803-0550, the number to call. Outside Buffalo, toll free, 1-888-550-2550, or via Twitter at John Murphy Show. Also, coming up after the break, we're going to revisit Steve Tasker at the Super Bowl. They've moved on to another location. Can't wait to see where it is. Maybe they're making their way through the
roller coaster in the mall.
In the Mall of America. Yeah. Yeah, we'll talk with those guys, too, back in Minneapolis when we return. The John Murphy Show with Donald Jones from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy and Donald Jones from our One Buffalo studio in Orchard Park, snowy Orchard Park. You were surprised when you woke up today and saw, what, 6 inches of snow on the ground here, Donald, approximately? Would you
I was surprised last night.
Last night when you saw the snow coming down?
Yeah, because I'm in the house. I'm just chilling.
Like you do. Like you
I
chill.
Do. Yeah, I was on my computer actually reading emails, sending off emails and stuff, chilling. And I get up. For some reason, something just told me, open the door and look outside. So I open the door and I'm like,
what?
What is going on here? I didn't even, I don't really pay much attention to the news, local news and stuff like that. So I didn't even know it was supposed to snow. I look outside and it was full-fledged snow. And then I go back and look at my phone and I'm like, oh, it's supposed to snow till tomorrow. Mm-hmm. This is not good.com.
About 6 inches of snow. Here in Buffalo and Orchard Park, nothing we can't handle. We expect to go back live to the Super Bowl with Steve Tasker. He's going to be at the NBC media conference today with NBC calling the game, Al Michaels, Chris Collinsworth, Michelle Tafoya, all that crew. They'll be answering questions, and maybe we'll get a chance to listen into some of that. In the meantime, let's take a call here. Jack calling from Rochester. Go ahead, Jack. You're on the air.
Hi. You know, I think Philadelphia is going to do pretty well against New England in the Super Bowl because I keep thinking back to one of Schwartz's last games as our defensive coordinator. We played the Patriots, and they only did their starters for a half because they were resting them for the Super Bowl. But that half of football, I never saw Brady so confused and frustrated before or since. And I bet he has Brady's number and can duplicate that again.
Well, I think that's the hope, and I think, as somebody pointed out, I think it was Solomon Wilcots with Steve earlier, Donald, they can get after the passer, and Schwartz can get it. And who do we have? Was it Greg Cosell or somebody a week ago talking about how, the key for the Eagles is, Schwartz is not going to blitz much. He'll probably mix in some blitzes, but they can put some pressure on Tom Brady and make him uncomfortable.
That's the biggest thing is, number one, you got to be able to disrupt their wide receivers at the line of scrimmage. If you can get your hands on them, and we did this podcast with Lorenzo yesterday, and he had his boy Mike Thomas on, who plays for safety for the Dolphins. And he said the same thing. If you can get your hands on those receivers to where Tom Brady he's not able to just pick up and throw the ball right away, if you can do that and you can get that pressure up the middle, which we know the Eagles have Fletcher Cox and they have some boys that can get it up the middle and from around the outsides, you can definitely get after Tom Brady. You can get some hits on Tom Brady. We've seen it this year in multiple games where Tom Brady is getting hit time and time and time again, and you can see the frustration on his face. You just got to be able to do that throughout the entire course of the game. For four quarters, And a lot of teams can't do it for four quarters. So we'll see if the Eagles can get that done.
Game approaches. We'll have a lot more analysis on the game. A lot of it coming from Minneapolis, where Steve Tasker is standing by. We're going to go to Steve in a moment or two at the NBC news conference, pre-Super Bowl news conference. Talked about this earlier. Roger Goodell, in an interview on Colin Cowherd's radio show, said that, yeah, maybe it is time to take another look at the controversial catch rule. You know, the old saying, I don't even know what a catch is anymore. Apparently the commissioner feels that way as well. And Colin Cowherd asked Roger Goodell if there's is he concerned about the fact that people are confused about what constitutes a catch in the NFL. Here's what the commissioner had to say.
I'm not just somewhat concerned. I am concerned. We just had five Hall of Fame receivers and several coaches come in just 2 weeks ago to focus on the catch-no-catch rule. How we bring clarity. And this is where the balance comes in, Colin. We've had other examples of this over the years where you want there to be clarity from an officiating standpoint, a coaching and a player standpoint. They know what it is, what it isn't. And so they draft the rule, the competition committee looks at it, they bring it to the membership, and they want that clarity. I think here you might have clarity in a large element of it, but then what happens is it's not the rule that people really want.
Right.
And one of our Hall of Fame receivers said it well to me when we looked at this a couple of years ago. Fans want catches. And
thank you. Yes.
And I think what, you know, we've got to try to do, and we had a really good discussion for over 3 hours and looking at a lot of tape, and we've got some ideas of how to bring some clarity to that. It's particularly in the going to the ground that I think has created a lot of the confusion, because it's a different rule when you're going to the ground than when you're on the sideline or in the end zone. And I think that's what we're focusing on. And the competition committee is going to be bringing this up in February and March. And I hope we'll be able to address this in a way that will bring more clarity and, frankly, more excitement to this.
Roger Goodell, and we talked about this earlier. Maybe folks have some thoughts on that. Phone lines open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. People want catches. I've never heard it expressed like that before. I think he's right about that.
Yeah.
But I'm not ready to throw out the rule book and totally sell out the defensive backs in an effort to – you can't call everything a catch. You know, ball bounces off the carpet, the ball not under control. That can't be a catch. To me, the key is – let the officials on the field make that determination and don't go frame by frame on the video and try to determine, did the ball move? Did he complete the catch? Did it touch the ground? Did it touch the ground in a meaningful way? Get rid of all that.
There have been times throughout the course of a game where I caught a pass. I remember we were in Houston, and I caught a pass on the sideline, and I go up, I catch it clean. When I come down and I hit the ground, the ball kind of slid down my body, but my hand was still underneath the ball. And I remember thinking to myself, like, oh, they're gonna wave that catch off. They never did. It was still a catch. But
did it go to replay, review?
I don't even remember if it went to review. I don't even remember. It was totally under my body, so I don't even know if they actually caught it, if the coaches caught it or anybody caught it. But it ended up being a catch. The biggest thing is you can tell when players on the field know it's a catch. And to be honest, for me, I'm the same as you. Like, if the ref can see it on the field, if he can see the ball move, because the play happens so fast, if he can see the ball move, then it's not a catch. If the ref can't actually see it, that means it's way too close for comfort. And because of that, just let it go. You know, I don't like having to go to replay and watch it frame by frame by frame, because there have been too many big plays that have gotten overturned once they go frame by frame. You think of, and we just started off with the Calvin Johnson play, which was the most obvious one that was like, really?
Yeah.
You just called that one off. But when you think back a few years ago with Dez Bryant against the Packers, I mean, that could have been a totally different playoff outcome in that playoffs. The one that they got called against the Cowboys,
yeah,
took that one away. The Packers moved on. There have been catches in the playoffs in big games where they call it off. And this year, obviously with the Bills, with the Patriots, the Steelers with the Patriots, all the way back to the beginning of the year with the Jets with the Patriots.
Yeah.
It's just things that are catches that are way too close for comfort that I feel like the refs need to just be able to call it on the field.
Right. And the commissioner says people want catches. You know what I think people want? They want certainty. They want right. they want to know that the official, the two eyes, or maybe four or six eyes on the field, whose job it is to make these calls, they want to know that they have looked at it quickly, real time, made their decision, and we move on. I think that's what people
and we
want.
Move on. The crazy thing is, and we always say this, you will never be able to please everybody because what will happen is, let's just say they took it out in terms of going frame by frame with the replay, and they just let the ref make it on the field, they're still going to have a million cameras in the stadium. And so what's going to happen is the ref's going to say that's a catch or not. You're going to go watch it on the replay. We are, as fans, watching the game on TV. And everybody's going to be like, oh, you're horrible as a ref. You know, so they're trying to keep that, I guess, out of the ref's hands.
Right.
But I don't know how you really get this thing right. You just got to be able to live with, and fans will have to be able to live with, the refs call it on the field and move on. And that's it. That's just what it is.
And you got to believe the commissioner and Alberto Riveron and that crew, they're all holding their breath for the next four or five days that nothing controversial happens this Sunday.
Because then not in the Super Bowl. Oof.
Not in the Super Bowl, please. Nothing like that in the Super Bowl. Speaking of the Super Bowl, our man Steve Tasker is there all this week. Last night he went to NFL opening night, the de facto media day for the NFL, and he had a chance to talk to a guy who made his bones covering the Philadelphia Eagles many years ago. Now, of course, he is big time on ESPN. ESPN NFL reporter Sal Palantonio with Steve Tasker at the Super Bowl.
Sal, this is just one more Super Bowl on a stack, but this one has the Eagles in it, so it's closer to your heart. Tell me about, you know, how many Super Bowls is this for you, first of all?
It actually is, Steve, pretty close to my heart because January 25th, 1993 was the day I was assigned to cover the Eagles. So this, my 25th anniversary just happened. And, you know, when you give a quarter century of your life to doing something and your wife and your family make sacrifices, you know, it'd be okay. I think I get a pass in this one case to say it'd be nice if they won one, right?
Talk a little bit. You also covered all the Patriots Super Bowls. I mean, you've seen these guys go around the block. So, you know, you're neck deep in experience with these two clubs.
Yeah, and I am. You know, I was there the day that Bill Belichick chose Brady over Bledsoe in New Orleans. I watched them both come down the elevator in the team hotel after the decision was made from the Pope. I remember that, Pope Belichick. And so I've been there at the very beginning of it, the infancy of it, and to see this, never thought this would happen. But it's a syndicate, you know? They know all the contingencies. It comes from Bill Belichick's father, Steve, who coached at the Naval Academy. This happens over a long... It's in their DNA, you know? And they're going to be tough to beat.
Yeah, talk a little bit about that. I mean, this is, you know, Eagles team that is no slouch. And not only that, they showed how good they were when they lost an MVP candidate at the most important position in quarterback, and Carson Wentz goes down, and all of a sudden they win the NFC Championship against a really good Viking club and really crushed them.
They've got good leadership and good coaching. But I was just up on the stage there with Tom Brady and Nick Foles, and Brady was cool as a cucumber, and Nick was a little nervous. Yeah. He really was. And I want to see how Nick absorbs this moment of this week and the scrutiny and the overwhelming amount of attention and how he incorporates that into his preparation. You've been there and known that. It's not easy to do.
Yeah, and in fact, you know, I talked to a number of the guys and asked them, you know, you put in the nuts and bolts and all the game plan and all the hard stuff this week while you're at home in your own place, in your own building, in your own meeting rooms. How do you get through the rest of this week, starting with tonight and this little gala we've got here with his, you know, everybody is here just to interview the players, and this is only the beginning. I mean, the Patriots just did this 12 months ago.
And these guys are new at it. And when I texted Doug Peterson this morning, I said, what was your overall message? And he said, remove the distractions as much as you possibly can. Remove the clutter. Yikes. That ain't easy. You did it. I don't know how you did it, but you did it.
Yeah, the clutter gets poured in your lap. I mean, you got to find a way around it. And we've spoken to a couple of guys, and they've said, you know, that's been the thing, stay in your routine even though you're in a strange place. Tell me about the team. What are the nuts and bolts? What do you think about what are the Eagles got to do against this Patriot team and a 40-year-old quarterback who's still playing at a high level?
I think it's three things. Number one, win the turnover battle. In their two Super Bowl losses, they had three interceptions in each game, Donovan McNabb and Ron Jaworski. And when you look at it, when Belichick in the postseason wins the turnover battle, he's 15-0 in his career as a head coach in the postseason. Two, field position is key. And that comes down to penalties, actually. In the postseason, the Patriots' opponents, the Jaguars and the Titans, had 16 call penalties against them. Patriots only five. That gives you a lot of field position, Steve. You know that special teams extraordinaire player. Special teams, number three. You got to have sound special teams. The Patriots have won all of their Super Bowls in one-score games and won a lot of them three in a row with Vinatieri kicking a game winner. Sound special teams, field position, turnover battle.
You know, too, even the game last year where they came back from the 28-3 deficit, this is a game that's going to come down to the wire, and you just got to be ready for that. And I think
every contingency's
got to be taken into account, and you got to know that both sides of the ball are going to have a chance to win it late or lose it if they make the mistake.
Belichick revealed after they came back from Atlanta that they practiced those two-point conversions, and they executed all of them in the Super Bowl with the game on the line. Think about that for a second. That's intense. And then when they intercepted Russell Wilson in that Super Bowl, the Malcolm Butler interception, they practiced that four times on Saturday afternoon in the walkthrough prior to that game. Four times. Matt Patricia, he went through the dance steps.
Stick your foot in the ground and break on the, just get the ball.
Stick your foot on the ground, break, and get the ball. Four times.
Yeah. And it worked.
And it worked. That's contingency planning, boy, I tell you. That's why they're so hard to beat.
Sal, enjoy the week. Thanks for spending some time with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Steve.
All right,
you're
man.
The best.
Thanks.
Steve Tasker with Sal Palantonio from ESPN at the Super Bowl last night at Super Bowl opening night. Steve has joined us a couple of times today, and he'll be back with us tomorrow. We're going to come back and talk about tomorrow and recap a little bit about what went on here on the show today, so come on back for that. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts, live from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
We learned presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. Good show today with a lot of Super Bowl content. Our man Steve Tasker out there all week long. And today, last night actually, he got a chance to talk to his former teammate, Eagles offensive coordinator Frank Reich. Former Bills backup quarterback Frank Reich talked to Steve about the Philadelphia Eagles offense.
We're like a basketball team that doesn't have a 30-point scorer. We have five guys who can score. All five guys can beat you. And so I think it makes us hard to defend because we're going to spread the ball around. I mean, even though Alshon Jeffries is our star receiver, and had a lot of touchdowns, you know, it's not like he had 100 catches and 1,500 yards. We spread it around. Same thing with our running backs. You know, we've got LeGarrette, Jay, Corey Clements, a really good running. I mean, we're spreading the ball around there as well. Everyone's invested. There's an unselfishness to this team that is contagious, and that unselfishness is creating a chemistry and a belief in one another that we have something special.
Frank Reich, former Bills quarterback on the Eagles offense. He's their offensive coordinator. We talked with Mike Waffle today, who just late yesterday announced his retirement as defensive line coach for the Buffalo Bills. 1 year here in Buffalo, 19 years before that in the NFL, mostly as a defensive line coach. But Mike Waffle says he will always fondly remember his time, his 1 year here with the Bills.
Well, I loved it. I mean, I'll never forget that locker room in Miami, and I was standing right behind Kyle Williams, and you know, and Reed and Gray, his sons, were right there, and just the joy that he was experiencing, the joy in my heart that he had the opportunities to reach the playoffs finally as a Buffalo Bill, and that alone was the highlight of my career, just experiencing that.
Mike Waffle. That was a highlight of his career, that locker room scene in Miami. on New Year's Eve. And it surprised me, Donald. This is a guy who's won a Super Bowl with the Giants. Got his D-line, got five sacks on Tom Brady, and yet that playoff clinching day there, New Year's Eve in Buffalo, or in Miami rather, that was a highlight of his career.
I mean, it's one thing to be in the locker room with the guys. You think that it was one of the highlights of his career, or the highlight, because he's from New York and he knows the pain of this city for the last 17 years, even though he's been coaching in other places. He knows, man, that city needs it. City needs it. And so to be there with a guy like Kyle, who's been here so long, to go through that excitement, the way it happened, probably had to be great for him.
Hey, we want to thank Steve Tasker and his producer out there, Jay Harris, who've done a great job. They've got more coming up tomorrow. Live interview set up with Mike Haynes, the Pro Bowl and Hall of Fame cornerback. Jabari Greer, former Bills cornerback, who's covering the Super Bowl for TSN in Canada. Ryan Leaf, you know his story. He'll talk about that tomorrow. Yeah. And we hope to have Ryan Groy on the show tomorrow as well. Want to thank our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Production assistance from J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, our producer Jay Harris, Kelly Rood helping out today as well, our producer Jay Harris out there in Minnesota, and of course Steve Tasker. For Donald and I, thanks for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow at 12 noon with the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, from One Bills Drive and from the Super Bowl on Buffalo Bills Radio.